You're listening to Geek Watch 1 with Kylan and Ken on the Tangent Bound Network.
Do not adjust your settings. Take your hands off the keys. Your search is over. These are the geeks you're looking for. You found Geek Watch 1 with Kylan and Ken.
This is going to be quite a ride.
Hey, Jim! Boom! That's a bad outfit! Boom!
I love you.
Me too, man. Hit me! My turn! Am I the meanest?
Show it now!
Am I the prettiest?
Show it now!
Am I the baddest mofo low down around this town?
Show it now!
Well, who am I?
Show it now!
The Shogun of Harlem.
For what lies ahead, ready are you?
We're police officers. We're not trained to handle this kind of violence.
Hey, Geeksters. I'm Kylan.
And I'm Ken.
And you found Geek Watch 1.
Hey, we're back. We survived a trip all the way to the Wild West of Montana.
Woo-hoo. Yeah, so it's been, what, a couple weeks? And, well, I guess really
it
3 weeks.
It feels like it's been forever.
I know. It's like, you know, you were here, next thing you know, you go out west. And
We've been up to a bunch of... You guys have been up to a couple of things. You definitely had some huge things happen in the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, it's been active. But you became like a U.S. Marshal or sheriff or something out there, right?
that got little 10 stars at junior sheriff.
Junior? Oh, you were too busy chasing after the special cows.
Yeah, Miss Vicky will tell you all about the special cow. This show, we got jam-packed, guys. We're going to try to keep it over our normal time. It may run a little over. But we're going to have some the wild news from Miss Vicky and I as we made the trip out to the Wild West of Montana, and we actually made it back. They let us come back. Miss Dawn has some news for us, some Deadpool news and some Sony Pictures news, possibly. Andy Hop is going to be here with us all day.
No, I am not.
Well, he's got some Motherwave update news. We also have a new segment that we're going to have at least from now until October. Of every show, we're going to try to do an interview with a guest from Con on the Cob. We're calling it The Road to Con on the Cob.
So. With a really cool, like, musical intro pending, possibly.
Or
maybe.
Not.
Yeah,
or not.
Depends on if I get around to editing something together. And then the end of the show is going to be Andy and Kylan and Crystal and Heather all went to Gen Con. If anybody doesn't know, Gen Con is one of the largest gaming conventions in the world. In Indianapolis, Indiana. It happens once a year, and we have some interviews with it. We have stories from Gen Con, which is going to be... Some of them are great. I've heard some.
There's some pictures that were posted on the K&K page, and there's a ton more, but it's... I don't know. You guys look at them or not. I don't know. They're there.
But speaking of the K&K page and Geek Watch 1, we actually have some major news, guys, for geeksters out there. We know everybody's been asking for it. I know we can't stop and not... What? What are you doing?
Wait. Someone didn't turn their phone down.
Wait, yeah, it's all, playing with my phone again.
All the geeksters are... That one geekster that... Yeah, you, the one with the shoelaces. I don't think it's for him.
Probably not.
But
everybody else, the big news. Do you want to do it? Or do you want me to? You take the first one, I'll take the second one?
Because there's two.
The weekly one is you.
Okay, all right, geeksters. All right, yeah, as you know, when we first started this wonderful little thing, we were going to do it once a month. Then after the first show, we're like, wait, there's too much going on. We can't do this once a month. We have to do this like every 2 weeks. All right, so then we did this thing every 2 weeks, and then... No, we made an appearance here, made an appearance there, and then we became the official podcast for Oddball and Con on Cob, and then news kept coming, and we keep doing things, and things are growing. It's too much, so now we have to go to a weekly format. Sorry. We're doing it every week, y'all.
When?
Starting in September 6th. September 6th. So that gives you plenty of time to go to the gym. Work on your cardio, eat your vegetables, and you know, get some curls in, and hug your mama, because it's about to get real up in here.
I don't know how we're going to do it with our schedule so busy as it is, but we will. We promise we will have a new show every week, every Wednesday, starting September 6th.
Also,
is a Sunday. That's when we're first recording.
Oh, yeah, we're recording on the 6th, so it'll be the Wednesday after that. The 9th. So September 9th will be the first...
Really?
Wrong way. But, so September 9th, you guys will have your first of the weekly Geek Watch 1s. The other news is for the GeekWatch1.com. Now, we've been talking to some friends. Our website, we haven't put a lot of new stuff up there other than news and when we're putting out our shows. Well, we're going to change that. We're going to have some friends actually start doing possibly like blog posts, at least one a day, starting in September. You'll have new content every day on GeekWatch1.com. So I know Miss Dawn and Kylan and Vicky have already committed. They'll do at least one article a week. And you'll know what it's going to be. Now, for parents out there, some of this may be safe work, some won't. We'll make sure we have a label when you actually click on the article. That way, if kids want to read them, the parents can tell them whether or not.
Let us know if your kids actually read these, because honestly, I don't believe they go to our website. I'm not convinced kids care to go to our website.
Well, we need to know, guys. We've not been getting any emails or anything. We need feedback on what you want to see on the website. Now, we have a couple people already doing blogs, but if there's something you want to see, we can put it up there, but we need to know what it is. You can either go to our Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all that.
Or email us, because we do have an email address, and you don't want to send it to us. You don't love us. I want to know why. I'm hurt. I feel reclamped. My man Andy here has to hug me and calm me down. And I can't talk no more.
We need more shirtless pics of you guys on the website.
Shirtless pics?
We're working on an idea for that. Keep your ears open for that.
Yeah.
We're working on something for that. Wait, not yet. Shirtless, we got to confirm all that.
Shirtless pics.
What's
that? Is the internet ready for that?
I just mean pictures that don't have shirts in them.
Ah.
I don't mean, like, pictures of you guys without shirts on. I just mean, like, a picture, like, of the aquarium. Or a picture like a telephone.
That's true.
Shirtless
no
pics,
shirts
period.
In the pics.
That is true. Now, Andy, would you participate in said shirtless pics?
I have literally gazillions of shirtless pics just sitting around waiting to be put on the website.
Okay, then.
In fact, I would
go.
Say I probably have more pictures without shirts than I have with shirts. That may or may not be true.
Well, Geeksters, if you send us emails, only through emails can you see these, but you got to let us know you want to see it. So, Geeksters, remember to email us at kylanandken@gmail.com.
That's kylanandken, that's the A with a little circle around it, gmail.com.
What's a dot look like?
The dot, it looks like a little, like I don't know, a little tick. If you see a little tick on your screen, that's probably it, unless you like got bugs in your house.
Yeah,
then
you need
to call
disease?
Somebody. Huh?
It won't give you Lyme disease?
It might give you Lyme disease. I am not a medical professional.
Hey, it may
not
be a tick, though. Could be Ant-Man.
It could be Ant-Man.
What if it's like a period?
You know what? The beauty of America is that if you want to use a period for a dot, you can do that, because you cannot let the man tell you that you can't use a dot for a period for a dot, or an ampersand if you feel that way. So, yeah, so send emails from day one. We got this email.
If you forget our email address, it's on Twitter and Facebook and the website.
And we know you go there. We know you go there because Facebook's let us know that you like that you saw something, and you know, they give us the boost and stuff. So yeah, we know.
Also, you're listening to this.
Yeah, you're listening. So
yeah, if you've listened to our shows, we put it out on every show. We want to get some emails,
please.
I'll send you guys an email.
But thank you.
Oh, thank you, Andy.
We'll read it on the air.
I don't
send
make
you an email.
Well, if you want
ever.
Wait, did you just totally reference Kid Video?
No.
I think you did unknowingly.
Maybe inadvertently.
Yeah. Oh, man.
It's possible that multiple characters throughout cinematic history have said the same line.
Yeah.
And had an evil laugh.
Oh, yeah.
There's never been an evil laugh on television or movies, ever.
No,
never. Ever.
Okay, so, moving on, guys. Like we said, we're going to have, Vicky and I are going to tell you all about the fun we had out in the Wild West of Montana. And out there it is still the Wild West.
Yeah, because Ken got told by the ranger.
did.
Actually, I did. Oh, what was that?
Oh, was it a raccoon? Like, no, costume? Because that would be cool. Like, Ranger Rick.
Ranger Rick.
No, one of the days, we went out to Montana. We flew out on Wednesday. Wednesday night, we actually went to Billings, Montana. Right outside, they have what's called the Rim Rocks. It's actually an interesting... Huh? Well, hang on. I'm getting to the... But the Rim Rocks...
Let's talk about the caves. We'll talk when you got about rested.
We'll get you there. That's towards the end of the trip.
You're going to have the setup.
Yeah, let me get the setup and everything else. But,
build tension.
Billings itself is a city down right on the edge of the Yellowstone River. But it has, like, 150, 200-foot cliffs on either side of the... Going up on either side of the city.
That's a lot of 200-foot cliffs.
They're huge.
He got lost. Yeah. It's okay.
But they have outside the city, they had the pictograph caves, so we were able to go and see some... Native American pictographs and stuff. That was cool. The second day, we went up to what they call the Beartooth Mountains.
No.
And what was it?
Beartooth Pass.
Well, what it is Beartooth
is
it's...
the city.
I thought that was Red Lodge. Okay. But you start at the bottom of the mountain.
They're interchangeable.
Yeah. Apparently.
Beartooth,
but,
Redtooth,
you
Red
take
Lodge.
Basically, it's getting into the Rocky Mountains. And we started at...
We were in Wyoming.
Huh?
We were in Wyoming.
Yeah, that's at the top. We were in Montana at the beginning. So, but it's weird because... you start at like 3,000 foot elevation.
All right.
In about 45 minutes, you're at 11,000 foot elevation, going up the back and forth up the mountains. We started at what, 75 degrees at the bottom? At the top, we were at 39 degrees.
No, we were at 40, 45, almost snow because it was coming down, the rain.
Yeah.
But it was above 11,000 feet because we came down to 11,000 feet.
Yeah, that's where we actually saw the
chipmunks.
Sasquatch.
But it was crazy. At the top of the mountains.
It was too cold.
Yeah.
Too cold for Sasquatch.
Yeah, it was too cold. Yeah,
we were actually above the tree line. Like, there was nothing bigger than, like, a foot and a half tall when we got up there.
Nice.
There were rocks.
But there's lots of rocks and craggies.
And
but
snow.
The top of the mountains, it's not peaks like you'd expect a mountain. It was big, giant, green meadows.
Really?
It was weird.
It was lichen.
Yeah. It was what?
It was lichens.
Yeah.
Lichen. All right.
It was nuts, some of the stuff that was up
they
there.
They had nuts and lichens?
Yes.
Cool.
But coming back down, we stopped at a rest area where we may have to send you guys the videos to put up there. We actually had, there was what? How many chipmunks would you say it was there?
100.
Probably 100 chipmunks
that
eating out of
saw.
Our hands.
And everyone knows that if you see one chipmunk, there's at least 1,000 more in the walls.
That's right. But there
was
100,000
chipmunks
around.
You
don't watch, they come out and bite your nuts.
I know. That's what they do.
They were.
But someone had actually left a bucket of sunflower seeds and things up there for people to...
Yeah.
And you could feed... The chipmunks would come and like sit in your hand and eat...
It was just like a swarm of chipmunks?
Exactly.
That's awesome.
And
they were swarming everybody.
The big fat ones were chasing and beating up the little ones.
Oh,
it sounds like the opening to like a sci-fi movie of the week.
Yeah.
But oh, look,
pretty
like an chipmunk
movie.
No!
Yeah, you can see the one, a couple of them wouldn't go back and empty their cheeks, so they just kept putting more and more in there, and the faces are ballooning up. It was awesome. But I'll send you guys the videos so we can put them up on the K&K page.
You got a video of that?
Oh, yeah, I have videos of
we
it.
We could totally like put it in black and white and put like, Sarah McLachlan
we can make it into a horror show.
That sounds awesome, though. It's like the ground is carpeted in chipmunks.
It felt like it. You had to watch where you step and make sure you don't step on one.
Wow. But they didn't run away and stuff?
No.
Nice.
Enough people had basically fed them that they've been domesticated somewhat, I mean, as much as you can.
It sounds like a cut scene from Leonard Part
That's
6.
That's his rocks. Those are his rocks.
Well, it's not going to help showing us when we're recording a podcast.
Yeah, the people
listening can't see, so I'll send
That's
it.
That's the problem.
Well, let's describe it. There's a big field with green lichens on it. And some
that was a different place.
Oh, a different place.
Okay, so about these special
now,
cows, let's move on.
As we come down, yeah, we were out there with Vicky's sister and brother-in-law, and they had, that was cool. There was down towards Rimrock, or at the bottom of the mountain, there was the city down there had, it's basically... A tourist town for the pass and for skiing in the winter. So in the summer, it's people going up through the pass. In the winter, it's... but they have a bunch of, like, art galleries and stuff. One of them actually had a Mater sitting out front from Cars.
Oh, really?
So they had taken an old tow truck and turned him into Mater.
All right.
Nice.
That was kind of cool. Next one, why don't you tell them about the farmer's market? On Saturday, we went to the farmer's market in Billings. In Ohio, a lot of people know what farmer's markets. In Ohio, you have a lot
That's
of...
That's where you go to buy farmers, right?
Exactly.
That's right.
But you have a lot... Like, every day, there's the chipmunks.
Cool.
But every day of the week, just about, there's a farm market somewhere in, like, the Akron, Ohio area.
Right.
You'll have five or six farmers there setting up their stuff. This was once a week, and downtown Billings is the only farmer's market in the area. So they had like five square block section of Billings shut down for a giant farmer's market.
So like a flea market kind of thing.
Kind of, but it's all food. Yeah, it's all foods and vegetables and stuff.
And then special cows?
Well, that's coming up.
Because I'm wondering if these are the same cows that I saw when I went to Montana.
This is my sister's neighbor.
Yeah.
But
your sister's neighbor is a special cow?
Yeah. No.
It is a special cow.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Now, tell them about the cows. Her sister lives about 15 minutes outside of Billings, okay? So tell them what we saw. We were driving down the road heading into town one day, and she saw this.
Off the side, there was the herd of the cows, and the one was all four legs up in the air.
Oh, and was sleeping with its four legs sticking straight up.
That's because they're so huge in Montana.
No, I thought it was dead, but yeah. My sister's like, it's sleeping. It's a special cow.
She said does it all the time.
So I'm thinking,
that's crazy.
Okay, is it actually sleeping? Is it dead, or is she saying it's sleeping because mm-hmm. she's got two kids in the car? I don't know.
But on the way back, it wasn't there, so.
Maybe the vultures carried it off. But when I drove through Montana, I don't know what cows you guys saw. The cows we saw were incredibly muscular cows. Mm-hmm. It looked like a pod of sea lions smashed together inside of a beanbag chair. They were just like a big, giant, sleek, black, leathery muscle thing. They didn't even look like cows. Exactly. It was like rhinoceroses with like wearing leather jackets.
That's
right.
Living in Ohio, we have a lot of dairy cows. You see the black.
Yeah.
Black and white speckled cow. Out there, there's no dairy cows at all. It's all beef cattle.
Yeah.
So it's all of them are the same color. They're all brown. They're all huge.
But, yeah, they're all, like, genetically bred. Like, there's another way to breed.
That's what Vicky was saying. They're all on roids.
Yeah. I mean, they probably all have hormones and growth hormones and things that make them, or they're just genetically that way, but... I was amazed. The cows in North Dakota, South Dakota, mm-hmm. Montana, Wyoming even, they're like twice the size of the cows we have here.
Yeah.
But so, we don't know about the cows. You don't know, man.
You just don't know.
Well, the next day we actually had, like what, 3 days left after the farmers were, Saturday, we came back on Tuesday. So Sunday, we actually left and went to Yellowstone Park, which was what, 3 hour drive? It was like a 3.5 hour drive out to Yellowstone, which I've never been any farther than like Des Moines, Iowa when I was a little kid. That's the farthest west I had ever been.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
So flying out to Montana was crazy because one, I'd never been on an airplane before. Two, I'd never been that far west. So it was a great trip for me to check stuff out.
Did you get a window seat?
The rim rocks. Yeah, that was awesome looking. But we have pictures of like the airport is actually up on the rim rocks. So we were looking out the window as we're flying in.
We're up on the plateau.
You're looking out the window, it's like, wow, that's a long way down. They're saying we're coming in for a landing. It's like, that's a long ways down. Then all of a sudden, there's ground underneath you because you came in at the edge of the plateau.
On top of the mesa.
It was crazy looking.
Nice.
So
that was your first time on a plane?
Yeah, it was first time I'd ever flown anywhere.
That's worthy of discussion.
Huh?
Did you get a window seat?
For some of it.
Yeah.
Some of it I did.
Was it daytime or nighttime?
It was all daytime. We left at like 6 a.m. It was funny because going out to Montana, it's a 36-hour drive approximately if you drive it. Well, we left at 6 a.m. our time and landed, what, 10:30 their time? A.M.?
Yeah.
So it was a 6-hour flight. We made it in 4 hours if you look at the clock.
That's because of the time change.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you travel in a great circle rather than a straight line.
Yeah.
Which alters the curvature of space-time.
Ah. Well, coming home, it took a lot longer because we actually ended up... It was weird. They routed us from Billings.
Only because of delays.
Well, because of delays, too. But we went from Billings to Minneapolis, Minnesota, to Atlanta, to Ohio. On the way there, we actually had to take 3 flights, too, because Billings is one of those airports that no one goes there.
Right.
You have to fly in from either...
They're afraid of the cows.
That's right. Well, you got to fly in from Denver, Salt Lake... Or Minneapolis, basically, the only people that have flights that go to Billings.
Yeah.
Because there's nothing there.
Yeah, there's really not a lot of reason to go there unless you know someone there.
Did you guys fly out of Akron or Cleveland?
Yeah, we flew out of Akron, Canton. We flew out of Akron to Detroit, which was basically you got up in the air long enough to get back down.
Right.
Yep.
Then from Detroit to Minneapolis, which was the same thing, got up in the air long enough to come back down. And then from Minneapolis to Billings was like 2 hours.
Nice.
So we really weren't in the air for a whole lot of time the whole time.
But you got to see the view.
Oh, yeah. Some of it was awesome.
Yeah.
I have some good pictures of, like, pillars of clouds that are, like,
nice.
Look like 100 miles tall. That's what it looks like. Obviously, it's
maybe
only
they
a couple hundred feet. You know what
miles,
yeah.
But
going out to Yellowstone, it was awesome. We got to see all of the regular sights and stuff. One thing that got me was how huge this place is. Most of the time we were at Yellowstone was spent driving. It took, like, all day to get to anything. But we saw Old Faithful. We saw Yellowstone Lake is one of the largest lakes that I've ever seen that you can actually see the other side. Because I've been to Lake Erie. Lake Erie, you can't see across it.
No, right.
But Yellowstone Lake is like 14 miles across at one point and like 27 miles long the other way. So
and you can actually see all the way across
it. You can see all the way across it. It was amazing. And once the wind starts to kick up, because you're up in the mountains there, you actually have whitecaps on the lake. At Yellowstone, we actually got to see every major large animal you can see at Yellowstone.
Yeah?
We first got there, and we saw a coyote and a couple of deer over in the grove here. And when we stopped, the guy actually told us what it was. When he pulled up, the deer was chasing the coyote. After that, we actually saw went to the geysers and saw some of the volcanic activity. Was awesome to see.
Actually, it was tectonic, not volcanic.
Well, but no, to get into the point, the other one where with the where I got in trouble with the ranger, we actually were pulling across. There's two major roads in Yellowstone. One cuts all the way across the center.
Okay.
And the other one's like a big loop that goes all the way around.
Okay.
Well, we had taken the, what was it, lower path loop or the northern loop to start with?
I know we came in the east gate.
Yeah, we were camping on the east side, but we took one of the loops at one day and then cut back to go cutting across the park. All of a sudden, we're stuck in a traffic jam in the middle of a park.
And that's the only way to tell if there's anything visible.
So what, were there, like, bison or something? What it
was, well, the bisons had got people to slow down, but this, what it was there was a bear about 100 yards off the road.
Yeah.
And we had found out later, so we were in a pickup truck, a four-door pickup truck, so I was actually in the bed of the pickup truck trying to take pictures.
As you're scarier than a bear. It wouldn't bother you.
Well, as we started to creep up, I actually stood up to take a picture. I did, the ranger's coming down the road and yelled at me about standing up in the bed of the pickup truck.
So you didn't really get in trouble.
Yeah, just he got, did, like, because he said it was cautioned. Unsafe, although, you know, you've got 30 people with toddlers standing there, and the only things between them is a 2-foot fence, and the bear, if it wanted to charge you, would have been there in no time, because it was not that far.
Yeah.
I mean, the pictures we took of it looked a lot smaller, because there was also a wolf. There was two black bear and a wolf. We saw the wolf going up. So
did they walk into a bar?
Yeah.
That would have been funny.
Yeah, they were making babies.
Really sounds like it.
No, they were making babies in the meadow.
Two black bears and a wolf walking.
Exactly. You missed it.
Recognizing the inherent danger in the situation.
It was crazy because there was no traffic moving either direction to start with, because everybody was out of their cars trying to take pictures, because you never see them. I guess it's very rare to actually see a bear, especially wolves. Wolves are never...
So the bear and the wolves were together?
Two bears.
But they were hanging out together.
The two bears were in the meadow, and it looks like the wolf had come down to figure out what they were doing, turned around and went back up.
We think that the bear had a kill, because when we drove past it, the bear disappeared in the high grass, but then it came up and you could see it circling, so obviously there was probably a kill and it came down.
There was something it was eating that everything else wanted to check out.
Maybe, I'm kind of picturing like a bear sitting on like a lounge chair. With, like, a big lemonade in his hand or something. And...
No, it was Smokey the Bear.
It was Smokey,
Smokey and Yogi.
We did see a lot of burn area where they'd, within the last couple of years, had burned out certain areas.
Yeah.
They have a lot of wildfires and stuff out there, depending on the time.
Right.
But also, we did see, we saw the elk. We saw, what was the small ones? The antelope. Or no, not antelope.
Yeah, they were the antelope.
Antelope? Okay.
That's what that was around.
Which I didn't realize, they're actually, I thought they were like small deer.
No.
But no, they're actually related more to goats and sheep.
Right, antelopes have horns, deer have antlers.
Those are the little tan things that we've seen out, you thought was a bird.
Yeah, so the other ones that we saw that are large animals are, we saw a moose on the way out of the park.
Nice.
We actually saw a moose and a baby moose.
I saw a baby moose when I was in Washington.
You did?
That's a different, this is your story.
And then we saw another deer on the way out of there, but yeah, so we saw every large-scale animal that you can see at Yellowstone Park somehow.
Yeah.
So that was our trip to Montana. We'll probably send you some pictures and see what Miss Dawn wants to put up on the website, but we're going to switch over to Miss Dawn. She has news for us. The first one is she has her Miss Dawn's Deadpool download. Isn't that what it
is? That's right. It's my Deadpool download, because... If you don't know by now, I don't know where you've been. The Deadpool trailer came out. By the time we post this, it's a week ago. And there's a red band and a green band. And we all know that red bands are better. And especially since it's Deadpool and it's going to be an R-rated movie, there's no point having a green band trailer. But anyway, if they're going to get advertising in, they have to have the green band. So we had the Deadpool trailer came out and the internet went wild, of course. There, of course, you guys have all seen it. We've seen it here. There's so much in it. There's the leaked footage has obviously made it into the film, and that's in the trailer, so it doesn't exactly give much away. You see kind of Wade before he becomes Deadpool, and the little bit of the process of him becoming who Deadpool is and why he gets involved in it, and it just has, there's a lot of action and adventure and violence in the Red Band version. You see glimpses of Vanessa, who ultimately becomes Copycat, although you don't know if she actually becomes that in this movie, but you see Vanessa. You also see Ajax, who has a really awesome clip of a sword fight with Deadpool. You see Colossus, who is completely CGI. It doesn't even really matter who the actor is, because they went ahead with a CGI Colossus. You also see a brief glimpse of Negasonic Teenage Warhead.
That is still the weirdest name I've ever heard of her.
That's one of the reasons they chose her, though. You know, because they wanted someone who really wasn't known, but could be kind of iconic in a way because of the name. You're not going to forget it. But she's apparently, like, the smart mouth, disillusioned teen kind of goth feel to her. She's completely deadpan sort of thing with Colossus. And then, of course, there's plenty of jokes about how Deadpool looks, and you get a glimpse of Weasel and Weasel's smart mouth comments and jokes about Deadpool's appearance. You also get to see Blind Al, who is, if you don't know anything about Blind Al, she's a senior citizen who Deadpool kind of has abducted in a way, but she lives with him and they kind of get along but don't get along, and he constantly pranks her and causes her to injure herself, etc., because she's blind, so he can do that. And she just, I don't know why it's so funny, but she's really funny.
It's always funny when you hurt old people.
It is! But she's not a willing participant. She's not an entirely nice person. That's the thing. It's not like she doesn't deserve it most of the time.
For the record, I don't think it's funny when you hurt old people.
Not just on the street.
Unless they're also blind.
But it's, I thought it was a fantastic trailer. It's making the movie look pretty awesome already, and considering the studio has so many flops involved with it, it's going to be good that they have a good one.
Well, according to you, this looks like this is actually going to be a good one, right? Everything looks right?
Yes, it's looking good.
You got to remember, though, this is the same company that put Channing Tatum in Gambit's costume.
The look on Kylan's face right now.
You know, yes, what? Everybody, it is still happening.
You know.
Does that mean the costume's
going to
be skinny?
Yeah, imagine what the costume's going to be with Channing Tatum in.
Like a G-string and some pasties.
No, the pasties could be cards.
They're going to be cards. They could be. That's right.
See, yeah.
Instead of holding the card and charging it, imagine where you could charge the cards from.
There are so many options.
No, it's not. No. No. For all this good and decent, please, Fox, listen to me. Please, don't do this.
Well, yeah, but I believe he's already signed the contract.
No, you know what? Doesn't matter. You can rip it up. Just flush it down the toilet. I don't care. Please, just don't. Look, I have no good authority that the man is illiterate, that that he has a little earbud, and they have to read his lines to him.
Vicky just found the actual title of the new Gambit movie.
Uh-huh.
Magic Gambit
3XL. And
Triple X.
See? No, see, you know what? See, I...
I know, you want one.
See, you know what? See, you know what? And I was having that... I can't. Can we just move on?
Hey, okay. Like, hey, he gets to ride into town riding a white horse.
Okay. We'll leave Kylan alone about Mr. Tatum.
Mr.
Tatum.
Really?
You know, my feeling about him, if I could just interject for just a minute, has nothing to do with his acting skill or anything like that. It's that his last name always makes me mentally say in my own brain, potato them.
So there you go. We'll call him Mr. Potato Them for you. For your sake, so you don't actually have to say his name. But leaving CT behind, let me just say, the Deadpool trailer looks awesome. Movie so far is looking great. It's very faithful to the feel of the comic and the character. So yeah. And moving on, we have the lovely news about Fantastic Four.
Flop.
as our pal Mike from Weeby Geeks and Mighty Marvel Geeks calls it, the Fantastic Flop.
Well, it has made the flop.
Absolutely.
I actually like it.
Really?
I'm probably the only person on Earth. I just watched it while you guys were setting up. That's where we just went. Yeah. And I think, aside from maybe the second, the Silver Surfer one,
yeah,
this is by far the best comic book movie I've seen.
Yeah, Andy's completely serious about this too. Yeah, absolutely.
Why wouldn't I be? What most people don't realize is this is an allegory. The movie itself isn't about four people who get superpowers and do crazy stuff or whatever they do in the movie that I didn't actually see. But what it really is about is a bold, lustful tale of a love triangle between a man, a woman,
and a rock.
And a giant octopus.
Where did the giant octopus go from?
Intermixed with
well, you haven't seen the movie.
An epic document depicting the struggle of the black man against the white devil slave masters. That's what this movie's about, and that's what people don't understand. People are trashing it. All I have to say is that people need to see the movie before they trash it, because then they'll have informed trashing. It'll be even more entertaining.
You know what? I stand corrected.
Yeah.
See? Well, see, apparently people do need to see the movie, because the estimate for this opening weekend is barely 27 million.
People.
Which means they haven't even made their budget at this point.
How much did it cost to make it? Do you know?
It was as much as it was for Ant-Man. I believe it was 130.
120. Mm-hmm. It cost 120. So they haven't. They're not even near halfway.
You got less than 100 million to go.
But didn't they already authorize a sequel?
I thought they did.
Yeah,
like
planning on it.
It's like the whole purpose of the movie was to create a sequel.
Yeah,
because they're going to do that crossover with the X property.
Mission Impossible, whatever number it is.
Five.
Beat it this weekend, and this is the second weekend for that movie. So a movie out for its second weekend beat a supposedly major superhero flick on its first
because
weekend.
Because it's Mission Impossible.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, that's how bad Fantastic Four is. People didn't want to go see it.
How does Shaun the Sheep do? That's what I want to know.
No, Shaun the Sheep wasn't a contender. It was pretty low, but in comparison for Fantastic Four, the other really bad initial launch of a superhero movie was back in 2012 with Ghost Rider, and that made $22 million in its opening weekend.
Yes, but Ghost Rider, I remember opening the winter.
Much lower budget too.
Right.
So basically, not surprisingly,
was that the original Ghost Rider or
Spirits
of Vengeance?
The Spirit of Vengeance, actually, yeah, 2012. Basically, from the beginning, people were saying this was going to be a bad movie. It's pretty much held true. You know, there's a lot of times when people are doubtful about it, or they hear about the casting and they don't think it's going to work, and then as it moves forward, by the time it gets to the movie, all of a sudden it's great. But this kind of held true on the flop end of things throughout.
Well, yeah, over at Mighty Marvel Geeks, you know, we all along, like, we were just like, it just seemed like it was an epic train wreck just waiting to happen. And we were sitting there, and we're talking about this, and the more information that came out about it, it was just like, I was probably the one, not an apologist, but I'm like, well, maybe it's not as bad as we think it's going to be, but no.
Even like the director and that was saying that ultimately it came down to the executives, because they made such bad choices with the direction they decided to go with the movie and casting and everything that they pretty much guaranteed.
Well, if true, that's got to be really frustrating. But at the same time, everyone tries to blame somebody else.
Right. Yeah. True.
Well, and see, the thing is, I don't know how many of you guys or even the listeners have been lucky enough to see the Roger Corman Fantastic Four movie.
I saw the play they did on Arrested Development.
Well, see, the thing is, I need to go back and watch this movie again. Outside of the laughable effects, I liked the way that they handled the reasoning for their abilities. I liked the casting choices that were made. It made sense. It was logical. And it's not even a case of, you know, race or anything like that. That's not... It was just bad choices all around. I think that they were saying that they felt like that script wise, if somebody could take the Roger Corman script and use
the big budget to make a good movie,
yeah. You had, because the Corman script was fun and true to the material. It just didn't have the budget for it. You know, I would be all for that. I know we don't need another Fantastic Four origin story. I know that, but I'm just saying.
I think that's one of the biggest problems. It's yet again an origin story. Like every time they've come out with it, a new version of Fantastic Four, it's an origin story.
Right.
Well, that's just about any hero that they've brought out.
And I know they went with the alternate universe of the younger team, etc., but that's part of why I thought it wasn't going to work from the beginning. As soon as I saw the casting and as soon as I saw the, oh, look, it's a bunch of kid brilliant scientists who are going into space. I, like, lost my interest right away with the young cast.
I think it would be the same problem if they tried to reboot Spider-Man as... I mean, I'd love to see it, but doing a Miles Morales Spider-Man right away.
Yeah.
Because the general population... I mean, everybody listening to the show here, everybody knows who Miles Morales is. Geeks know this. But they're trying to aim it at more of a general population, and people have never even heard of Miles Morales.
Right.
I have until recently.
Yeah.
Well, see, but see, the thing is, they're introducing him through the comics, well, like through the Marvel comics and through Ultimate Spider-Man on Disney XD.
Well, yeah, but if you introduce him in the movies, at least you're not requiring an origin story.
Right.
You know, it's not going all the way back to this is how Spider-Man became Spider-Man. No, because you've got Miles Morales is a different Spider-Man. You've still got Peter Parker, and you could have Peter Parker introduce him.
Right. And I think that's what
I thought it was that Peter Parker was Spider-Man.
He is.
And then something happened to him. Miles Morales came on the scene, but Miles Morales is Spider-Man. It's just written. I've never actually heard
Spider-Man.
It.
It's Spider-Man. It's still Spider-Man.
He is. I think that maybe there may be some truth to that. I'm not sure, but
Miles
they are
Spider-Man.
But now, of course, the question with Fantastic Four is how quickly is Fox going to try and get rid of the property, and is Marvel going to take it back right away, or are they going to make them beg for it?
I think
that's if they even decide to let it go. They may just write this off and move on and keep going.
Right. And the other thing is, though, one of the main reasons they've made this movie is so that they wouldn't lose the rights to it. Because of it's such a flop, though, are they going to bother keeping this up and in a couple years coming up with another movie that's going to be just as much of a flop?
That's the big question a lot of people have had recently is, because no one... outside of the movie executives and stuff, know the actual contract, the way it's written.
Right.
We know that they have to do a movie every so often to keep the rights. But is there a writer in there that if you make a certain amount of money or you lose a certain amount of money, you lose the right? No one knows. So that's going to come down to, in the months or years coming up, what's going to happen. No one knows.
And the other thing is, I mean, Marvel is basically making sure they don't make any extra money.
Yeah.
Because Marvel has the rights to all the action figures, etc. They've trashed any idea of action figures being out there, so there's nothing movie tie-in related in the toy stores, and there's no longer a Fantastic Four comic book, so you don't get any interest from that pulling people in, and all you have is it Denny's has the Fantastic Four menu?
which according has bacon to... on the Thing's meal, which I believe, isn't he Jewish?
Yeah, Anthony is Jewish.
That's right.
He is Jewish.
He's apparently not. The Thing burger.
He's not very orthodox.
Bacon burger.
Yeah. And I got this last night. The Nerdpocalypse tweeted that at the Fantastic Four screening, and Fox is passing out a survey to decide what to do with the franchise. That's not a good thing.
Oh, they're passing it.
I got that last night
at the screening.
At the screening,
that's
they did that.
In your...
Yeah. Well, I mean, they didn't even let the press release any reviews until, like, a day before the movie released. Like, that was right there you were talking about, okay, we have absolutely no faith in anything that's getting done here.
Yeah, but, you know, maybe the point is, let's see how bad it can be, and then everyone will want to watch it just to see how bad it is.
Yeah, but you're not going to want to pay the money to go... Yeah. You'll wait till its second run or just comes out on DVD or something. The only other piece of news I have is some release dates that came out from Sony for those of you interested in some of their properties. We have, they have a date for the new live-action Spider-Man of July 28th, 2017, and then the animated Spider-Man film that'll actually be in theaters will be July 20th, 2018, so a year after. There's, for Dark Tower fans, for the Stephen King series, there's a Dark Tower movie that's going to be premiering in January of 2017. In case you hadn't heard, there's a new Jumanji film that's going to be on Christmas in 2016, so Christmas of next year.
Okay.
They moved up the Ghostbusters movie by a week to July 15th, and then there's, Bad Boys is actually going to be getting two sequels now. They don't have any dates for that, but Bad Boys is getting two sequels now because, you know, we've been without it for so long, we really want Bad Boys again, I guess.
I liked the
they
Bad Boys
movies. They were fun films.
So.
They were. So that's the general news for now.
Okay. The next one, I think we're going to go ahead and go to the Road to Con on the Cob.
Right.
And then as soon as we, because everything else after that is going to lead into the Gen Con discussion anyway. So, Geeksters, this is Marcus Calvert. He's going to be one of our guests, and our friend's going to be at Con on the Cob, so you can come and meet him there. But this is a quick introduction to him.
Hey, Geeksters. We are here at the Barberton Art.
It's our Barberton Art Market, I believe. It's
Bam! Yeah. Mart.
Yes.
Mart implied.
And this is the first in what we are calling our Road to Con on the Cob. And we are hanging out here with Marcus Calvert, who is going to be present at the con and also doing a couple of panels, one on So You Want to Be a Writer, Writing 101. We haven't come up with the finalized name for it, but you get the idea. And one on self-publishing. And so, Marcus, what's up? How's it going?
Oh, it's sideways and on fire, but in a good way. Thank you. How are you, sir?
Doing good.
No, 30 seconds. If you guys aren't here, you're missing us. You're missing the fun. You're missing Lucy.
at 3:05 in the afternoon.
You're missing the dessert that Kylan ate.
I ate part of it. I didn't eat the whole thing.
He had a little bit of help. Okay.
I respect that.
Okay. Now that Vicky crashed her interview,
yeah,
we'll continue.
I told you I was going to bomb you.
You did. All right, so Marcus, we ran into you
Geek
2
Fest.
Weeks ago at Geek Fest. And you were selling your books, and we ran into you at Concoction.
Cleveland Concoction.
And you were so give us a spiel. Give us a spiel, and then we
the author bio spiel or the buy my stuff spiel.
Well, let's start with the author bio. How'd you get into writing and things?
Well, my parents were simple folks. I always wanted to say that.
Sounds like the start of a Kylan story.
Thank you. Single mama raised, which explains much. Only child, again, explains much. Grew up after Star Wars, Raiders of the Lost Ark, action figures, twisted imagination. Taught myself how to type at 9 because I always want to write my own stuff. Like, I could do it better than that crap, you know? And mom wanted me to be a lawyer. So she's like, okay, fine. You can get the typewriter, but that's it. So I'd say I grew up relatively normal, but with these ideas buzzing around in my head, and it just got worse as I got older. College, I dabbled with a little bit, but then I want to say after grad school, when I realized I didn't want to be a lawyer, public administrator, I had a useless master's, I didn't want to work in an office or be a manager, just had this restlessness, like, God. I want to do something. I want to create. It's the only thing that seemed to make sense. And everyone's giving me these little hints. You know, if you don't believe in God, be a writer. It'll come to you. There's a muse or something. Feel free to sacrifice goats to it. But basically, someone's telling me, all right, be a writer. So I gave it like a shot over here while I'm working a day job to eat. And everything just fell into place in 2008. I mean, the student loan got paid. I met an editor. And I found myself in the black for the first time in my life. So I was like, okay, what are you going to do? You're going to ramp up for your retirement, wait to die? You're going to buy a condo, get some cool stuff? What are you going to do? Well, I'm going to go into debt and be a writer, dadgummit. So I had all these short stories after a really bad breakup. 1, 2, 3, 50, 100, 150. And what bothered me was if I died and someone found these, they would either throw them out with my underwear or they would make a ton of money after I'm gone under their name. So I figured, what the heck, do a book, see what happens. Unheroic was the first one. I self-published it through Fast Pencil, a company out of California. They were good to me. I was on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Kindle, and I liked it. Made a few bucks, and I just went for the other one, and the next one, and the next one. I told myself 30 books before I croak, if possible. And I've been at it ever since.
So earlier we heard, you're sitting right, just so the geeksters know, Vicky has her jewelry booth set up here at BAM, and you're actually set up right beside her.
Mm-hmm.
We've heard the spiel a couple times. You've told people that come in and see your books. You have 5 books here right now. Do you have more out, or do you got more coming?
One a year since 2011 leaves me at 5 books at present, and okay. Working on Frat Code, the next one should be out around March.
Okay. Well, give us this feel. You were telling people your writing style.
Okay, here's the thing. I had this idea of starting off with a novel. I didn't have it in me. The ability to hold it together and keep it going, right? So I went with the short stories, and, well, let me put it this way. Unheroic's the first one. Book of Schemes is the second. Protected is the third. 36 short stories to a book, each with its own theme. Unheroic is, think, a Twilight Zone-style story where every story has somebody in danger and someone trying to save the day. But they're not what you would call a regular hero. Like, what if a demon from hell saves the day? What if a vampire owing child support saves the day? What if Cupid running an escort service is saving the day? Book of Schemes is my bestseller. Schemes, nothing but. Some goofy, some... Like a rock star being framed for war crimes in another galaxy, to the Villain of the Year awards and how they're scheming to win it. I mean, schemes. And Protected, I was going to do I Villain, but I kind of fell behind and I ended up doing Protected. These are the longest, darkest, meanest, funniest stories I've written, where it's like side A messes with side B and regrets it. I mean, gets slapped around mean. Like, okay, see the large bulldog with three eyes that's chewing through the shotgun?
Yeah.
That's a dude's imaginary friend. Don't mess with the dude.
Right.
You know, and the imaginary friend will mess with you. I did those, and they were fun. I'll sell them a little bit, but then I had that itch. Okay, write the novel. Because folks are like, okay, short stories are cool, but I want to see a novel. The novel took me 2.5 years to write. Something that short, but something so that diabolical. Because I was inspired by Simon R. Green or Harry Harrison or yeah. Nick Pallotta. The guys who leave out the, oh, it was a windy and wondrous day. They spend like 70 pages talking about someone farting. I just get to it. I tell a story, it's over, it's done.
Right.
And that's what our villain is. What if you had a bad guy who never seeks redemption, who's forced to save the world and turns it into a business model? In a world where most of the heroes are dead. Because in a real world, heroes should not live. If you're Bruce Wayne, they're going to figure out your identity and break you inside of 10 years.
That's true.
Glasses and Clark Kent, please.
Right.
Oh, you're Hal Jordan, huh? Hey, let me shake your hand and take your ring off. Idiot.
Yes.
Wait, what's that thing on your hand? So, I want to go with some iVillain books along Benjamin Clyde. That's the guy. This dude who lies about his past and pretends to be a top-notch fixer, a ranger of evil, or good, whatever you pay him to do, frankly, because he's basically a one-man crook temp service. He loses it all and has to fight crime, and he reinvents himself as something of a screw Batman-style crime fighter, complete with a wakizashi on his back, a do-rag, and a revolver that shoots exploding rounds. I mean, each bullet will level a city block if it hits the right thing. And I just went from there.
Cool. So you're, it's safe to say that you're living your geek, basically.
Oh, I can't stop. I never stop the geek. I mean, once you figure out you're a geek, it's over.
Right.
Hello, how are you today? I'm Marcus Calvert, and these are my books. Would you care for the quick spiel? Yeah. Okay, these are short stories. Think Twilight Zone on steroids, right? I'm gonna let the tears flow. All right, sorry, we're at an event. People are coming in. I still gotta do some business. No offense.
Hey, that's fine. That's fine.
All right. This is a hip crowd. I like these Barberton people. I mean, if you're a vendor, I recommend you come to the next one. They're affordable. They're well spaced. They're really nice people, and the locales are nice. I think I'm gonna get some Eatons after this.
Oh yeah.
With a bookstore, apparently it's like 80,000 square feet of used books.
It is.
Oh yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, that place is cracked. Right now.
I know, that does sound woody inducing.
You're going to walk in there and it's going to be like, let me just back up my car and just put all the things in the trunk.
The best part is it has that old book smell.
Oh, and Giants. You remember the giant size Kiss figures? Like about this tall? They have all four of them in there. All four.
Oh, I got to take you into that other shop over here still. That Stuff Emporium.
Yeah, Stuff Emporium. It looks like hell's what? Comics.
They have everything
games,
in that place.
Toys. Downtown Barbara.
I'm making good money today, guys, and you are filling me with temptations I don't need. Okay? It's like the angel got knocked off my freaking shoulder, thrown into the back of a van by some masked Irishman, and driven off into the night. Shame on you. And the devil's like paying them.
Sorry?
Via Skype.
Enabler. Okay.
We can do that. We have a special request from Miss Vicky. All the geeksters know Miss Vicky. She's my wife. She wanted to know, what's your opinion on the breakup of Kermit and Miss Piggy?
They were together?
Yeah, well, see, they broke up for the first time before, was it the Muppets Take Manhattan? They broke up and then they got back together.
Yeah. I think she tricked him into getting married at the end of Muppets Take Manhattan. That
what?
Was real. He didn't know it was real.
Right, and see, now the thing is...
What, was he drugged?
No, they did it as part of a stage show.
Oh.
So he thought he was acting in a stage show.
Did he sign a license?
I don't know.
I don't know.
And did she give him swine flu?
Oh!
I mean, that's some Walking Dead right there. You don't want that. I mean, that could be like the beginning of the zombie apocalypse. A pig bangs a frog? That might kill us all. I mean...
You know, you're right.
There are state laws for bizarre reasons, like you can't get a fish drunk in Ohio. Why?
Hey, you're also not allowed to hunt whale in Ohio.
I can respect that.
Yeah.
Whales are cute and cuddly.
Yes.
Well, we've been going at this for about 12 minutes already.
If you're Unicron.
I think we're going to wrap this up for today. We're definitely going to get another interview with you, at least at Con on the Cob.
Looking forward to it. Looking forward to it.
Why don't you go ahead, Marcus? Let everybody know how they can get a hold of you, how they can find you. Sure. On social media or anything else?
Okay. I'm on Kindle, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, all that stuff. But do me a favor. Ignore them. See, they take money out of whatever you would buy before it gets to me, so I may see like $2 out of a book purchase. So I have this website called www.talesunlimited.net. Please go there. The customer service is great because, well, I'm the staff, you know what I mean? So if you buy a book from me, like a print copy, I will autograph it and mail it to you on the house. If you buy two, you get one free. They will be autographed as well. That's $30. Single books, print, $15. This is all laid out on the site. But if you get like a PDF from me, I'll email it to you myself. If you want a t-shirt, I'll hook you up. It comes from me, you know what I mean? And I'll get it to you cheaper than Amazon. I'll get it to you better than Amazon because they don't autograph.
Well, there you go.
Oh, one last thing, if I may. Keep going. Marcus V. Calvert, my full name. Look for me on Facebook. I post stuff for writers.
Okay.
It's helped me out a lot, by the way, because I follow you on Facebook. And
I release a lot of stuff, not of my own, but of other people's. It's a great place to just find the knowledge of other authors and just put stuff. So if you're ever doing your own fan page as a writer, just find other people's stuff and throw it on there and let them steal from you. It's all free AFE information, right? Fluid data.
Well, thanks, Marcus, for the time, and we're looking forward to Con on the Cob. I'm pretty sure we're going to see you again at Odd Mall 2.
Count on it.
Great. So, well, Geeksters, this is Kylan, and Ken just stepped away, and we will be talking at you later.
Peace out, folks.
Okay, Geeksters. Now, that was Marcus Calvert. He'll be at Con on the Cob, so come see him. Tell him you heard about him on Geek Watch 1. Next, we have actually Andy and Kylan and Dawn and Heather, like we said, went to Gen Con this year. So,
Crystal and Heather, not Dawn and Heather.
Oh, sorry, Dawn was there. Crystal was there, though. So, we're going to get into some of what is Gen Con and what you guys did. So, go ahead, Kylan, what do you got?
Well, Gen Con is the biggest, or one of the biggest, gaming conventions in the world. It's held in Indianapolis, and it's over 4 days. This one was... Well, July 30th through January. No, wow.
Okay, forget the date. It was 4 days.
It was last week, wasn't it? It was August 30th through...
No, July 30th. Forget the dates, I told you. Well, just keep going.
Anyway, okay. Well,
it was 4 days at the end of July and August of 2015. Yeah, that.
Math is hard.
It is. I'm like, I don't know. But anyway...
He's still recovering from the con. Apparently.
Seriously. But it was 4 days of awesomeness and... I mean, there were people from Australia there. People are traveling across huge bodies of water to come and game.
There were French guys.
Yeah, there were French people, actually. There's one guy that I met who was from New Zealand that was playing Low Life with Andy. I mean, I saw families. I saw... groups of friends. I saw
individuals. There were individuals.
I saw lots and lots of individuals.
One thing that impressed me was the Indianapolis Visitors Bureau, I believe, put up a video that Kylan put up on his Facebook page.
Yep.
That watching the video of this, and they took a video of Gen Con for like a commercial for Indianapolis. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And if you've ever seen the videos of Comic Con, of the throngs of people trying to get through the door, it looked like Comic Con. But this is all for gaming, tabletop gaming, and board gaming, and role playing, and all these things.
Yeah, I look more like the Berlin Wall coming down.
It was like four. I mean, I was there for 4 days, and I didn't even scratch a tenth.
You didn't even scratch a percent.
I really didn't.
You didn't scratch anything.
I spent all my time for the most part in the vendors hall. Although I did get to sit in on one panel,
and you had to run two games.
Oh, and I got to run two games. Now, mind you, this is huge for me because normally when I do RPGs, I'm on the player side of things. I've never GM'd in my entire life, and my first time GMing is at the world's largest gaming convention.
In this country.
The world's largest in the U.S.
In the U.S. I don't know. Or one of the biggest ones. One of the biggest ones in the world. Yeah. So it was a good time.
Actually, that leads into your running a game for Andy. Andy,
yeah.
This was the worldwide release of your Living Low Life... Living Low, correct?
Living Low, yeah.
The Living Low campaign. How did that go?
Well, the games were super fun. My man Joseph Wolves and Kylan and I ran games Yeah, I mean, we had a fantastic time. Living Low games went fantastically. I used the fantastic adjective like 4 times in a row. That's really bad writing. You guys need a better writer for this show. Anyway, Gen Con did the same thing Origins did, where they neglected to mention in the book that you're supposed to make your own character. Mm-hmm. So it's a good thing I thought ahead and had pre-generated characters this time. Right. So as a test of Living Low, it wasn't so great because no one made a character. But as a just playing low life at a con, I think it went fantastically. Look at my amazing lexicon of that vocabulary there.
It's fantastic.
Fantastic. Like, oh, I used amazing there. I should have said fantastic.
That's right.
You can edit that in post. Anyway, no, I mean, actually, we released a bunch of new products. There were some of them that were out at Origins, but this was like the big major release of Gazoink and its 10 expansion decks, the new low life role playing game. Was a very big success. We told like 800,000 copies of it. And again, I use the word like 800,000 copies. In the same way that Ken said that the clouds were like 3,000 feet tall.
No, there was 30,000 miles.
Well, regardless, it's a comparison. Like, I didn't actually sell 300,000 copies of the book.
But it felt like it.
Came close in like a galactic scale. It was close.
Yeah.
Cosmically speaking.
Other thing.
And Alpha Beast Soup, my brand new storybook for children and adults. Was debuted, and that went over super well.
Cool.
And I'm going to even plug it right here, if I may.
Yep. Please do.
I'm going to post it on my website, lowteak.com, tomorrow, that if you buy Alpha Beast Soup, my brand new illustrated picture book for children and adults, free shipping!
Woo!
This week only. And this comes out on Wednesday, so I'm going to go Wednesday to Wednesday.
Cool. Okay, yeah.
Yeah. Sweet. So, I don't know. Actually, if you guys have some time, I know we're running short on time here, but I want to hear more about Kylan's first experiences as a game master.
Okay. Well, I have to admit, my first game was on Thursday night, first night at the con, and that was from 8 to midnight. But I actually had the honor of playing Low Life with Andy on the Saturday before the con, and then I sat with Andy during his game earlier that day. And so that was my crash course, because otherwise I'm more concerned with, you know, building up my character. So then,
and your pecs.
Yeah, and my pecs. So then, I lucked out and had an awesome group with me. They were all familiar with Savage Worlds, which is what the system that Low Life is based in. And so these guys were all familiar with it. They were not familiar with Low Life, but they were interested in the world and the being able to play in it. And so I ran one of your modules, and it was awesome. It was more of a mystery-based module as opposed to one that had a lot of fighting in it. So, you know, more of a puzzle-solving game. I don't know.
Solvering.
Nice. Something like that. You like that word?
You so, speak gooder English.
That's right. And so these guys were so, I don't know, they got in the spirit of what an RPG is about. And so when I'm first starting to play, I'm kind of trying to gauge the room. And these guys were more about the adventure than, you know, making sure that each rule is being followed to the letter. And so once I kind of was able to confirm that from them, then the adventure just took off. And these guys were thinking outside the box. I didn't have to give them everything, you know, and so that freed me up to tell the story. And to, you know, throw some voices in, throw a little bit of flavor in there. There's a lot of flavor in the story as it is, but put a little.
Is there any flavor Flav in the story?
Yeah, boy.
Kylan instinctively has more flavor than like lime bacon.
Well, you know.
So it comes across.
Well, you know.
But, you know, you must have done an awesome job, because every one of your players came and bought the book after the game.
Sweet. Both
of your games. So.
Thank you. The second one, I was like, they weren't familiar with Savage Worlds. They weren't familiar with Low Life, and I'm like, okay. So that was
question one. Why did you sign up?
But they told me it was a father and a couple of and his two boys, and there was this other guy, and they all signed up because they said it looked interesting. Like, okay.
And it does.
So
So then I actually had to, you know, kind of get a little bit heavier with the rules, you know, because these guys weren't familiar with that.
Right.
So I had to give them a little bit more of a guideline to go by. But at the same time, you know, once I kind of got them, you know,
into the fold,
then I was able to kind of run with the adventure a little bit. And, you know, there was one point where one of the characters is fighting these creatures, and the kid rolled like an insanely high roll. And so I just had fun with it. I said, well, you took your weapon, you hit this one in the head, and it, you know, blew it apart. And then you took his leg, and then you... And I just kind of went off, and the kid's like, and as I'm describing the carnage, his eyes are getting bigger and bigger, his smile's getting wider and wider, and I'm like, yeah, all right, you know. So, and it was fun. It was a good time, and I never thought I would be one for GMing. And I get it now. I get it, and I could...
So apparently look for that at Con on the Cob now. Like,
oh, yeah. Fist bump. See, so, yeah. Kylie never told me. Like, he said, this will be my first time. I thought he meant it's his first time ever running Low Life. I didn't know he was saying his first time ever GMing a game at all.
Yeah.
So I would have tried to prepare you better. If
No, dude.
You did great. I mean, your players came to me and talked to me about your game, and I asked how it went. And they said, you know, at first it was evident that you were new at it, that you didn't know the rules and stuff.
Right.
And once you hit your stride, they said it was a great time, and they had, you know, a really good time. So
there you go.
So, Kylan, since you've never GM'd before, would you say possibly everybody that's listened to our show knows that you've written a book and you're a writer or some and stuff.
Right.
Do you think that helped with telling the stories and being a GM?
Yeah, well, you know, yeah, because you're telling... You're guiding these people on this adventure, you know, and so they're looking to you because you know everything. They don't know it. And yeah, you know, if you're creative and you like to spin the tail and, you know, and guide these people along, yeah. Yeah, I like a good story. I like being told a good story. And you know, you have the luck of the dice going and that sort of thing. And so I could even have the story wanting to go one way in my head, but the dice say another.
Or the players.
So then I have to even get to the point where I learned to take myself out of it and play to the crowd. And so, yeah, it's being a writer helped a lot, and just enjoying the world that you're playing in helps a lot too. I love Mother Oith. I love living in that world. Oh, so sure. That just made it that much more fun for me. So
thanks, man.
Sure.
My investment is paying off.
Yes.
Well, Geeksters, Kylan being there for 4 days, We wanted to make sure you guys were able to go with him. Like, I wasn't able to be there. Miss Vicky wasn't able to be there. Miss Dawn wasn't able to be there. We wish we were. Hopefully, we're thinking about maybe for next year. But Kylan actually had his recorder with him the whole time he was there. Now, most of this, the first clip you're going to hear was random just people you had interviewed that from the con floor. Give us a little description.
Well, I decided that when I was there, it would be good to get some impressions from attendees. It was my first time there, so, you know, I didn't know what to expect. I have an impression, but I didn't know. And so I just, you know, took opportunities as they came to interview a few people. One was a cosplayer that I had run into on day one of the con. Another one was a gentleman that was playing Andy's game. And
it was his first time there, too.
And that was his first time at the con, too. And there was another one that was a gentleman that was... He was a regular attendee, and I really enjoyed... He actually addressed the presence of cosplay. I believe this was the first year that cosplay was a recognized component of Gen Con. And so it was good to get that impression from a seasoned attendee, so... So yeah, so that's what you guys are going to be hearing.
Yeah.
Receiving incoming transmission.
I believe there are at least 7 or 8 hotels that are connected with the convention that have space allocated for either gaming or seminars.
Really?
Or workshops, yes. Because there's the JW, there's the Marriott, there's the Westin, there's the Omni Severin, Embassy Suites. Crown Center, Union Station. I think there was at least one or two others. that allocated space for the convention, and as much growth as the convention sees every year consistently, they're even running out of room there. They need to expand further into the downtown area because they just don't have the room to support everyone.
What initially brought you to Gen Con, and what keeps you coming back?
Initially, I play Dungeons and Dragons with a group of friends.
Okay.
And one of the people in my group had mentioned this. I'd never heard of Gen Con before 4 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And he had mentioned on a whim that it was coming up. He had been before once or twice.
Mm-hmm.
And he thought that it would be something fun for us to do as a group,
mm-hmm.
just to kind of get away, and we all had vacation time to use anyway. So we thought it'd be something enjoyable. We could just drive out and come to the convention. And you could not prepare for Gen Con. It's something you really have to experience.
Yeah, no, you can't. I'm learning that.
I think, well, there's no really one thing that keeps us coming back. It's just everything. It's the experience. It's the people, making new friends, and catching up with them, because we have friends that are from all over the world, and unless we connect online through social media, we never really have the chance to sit across the table for them and have an actual conversation. And perhaps that's me with my personality, but that's something that I crave, is the interaction. There and having the opportunity to catch up with friends that I haven't seen in 9 months or a year, it means a lot.
Right.
And plus, playing all the games and being exposed to new games, things that I might not have come across if I'm not, you know, scouring websites and message boards trying to come up with new information about new games. And then the experiences, so many of the live action performances. And the feature films, and so much of the entertainment, which is unique to the convention or, you know, convention style,
mm-hmm.
Which I think is just so much fun to be involved with. And say, if you see a live action performance, and someone dresses up as a certain character from a comic book or a movie or a game, and you say, oh, I recognize that. That's a cool reference because I played that game, or I've watched that movie. I've watched that movie 1,000 times.
Right.
Just just little things like that that add up. So there's no real one thing. I know there's many other instances I can come up with to describe the reason to come back. But for my group, there's three of us, it's an easy drive. It's a lot of fun just to get away and to catch up with friends.
Right.
And just have the experience.
You see groups of people that, like, if there's an open space, there's going to be a game played on it.
We have a couple video game characters, and I can't remember where the plague doctor is from. But regardless, I mean, they spend a lot of time in the costume. It looks great. And,
right.
You know, they would, walking through the entire convention, they would have people coming up to them and saying, wow, that's a cool costume.
Right.
I was like, oh, you did a great job. Can I take a picture? You know, because the person did such a good job on the costume that some random person that didn't know about before will probably never see again once they have a photograph of them, because that person in that costume represents a little piece of the convention to the random person.
Right, that's my first question is, have you been to Gen Con before? Is this your first one, or have you been?
It's my first time.
Okay, and for you?
It's my second time.
Your second time. So did you participate in cosplay last year?
Yes, I did.
And are you noticing more cosplayers this year, or?
Actually, I'm noticing a little bit more for the first day, because usually not that many people do it, and there's actually quite a few more than last year.
Cool. Are you also into gaming as well, or?
Yes. I love games. All kinds of games.
RPGs, card games, just the whole thing. Okay, cool.
The whole big shebang.
And so do you tend to cosplay through the whole convention, or do you usually just pick a day or two?
Last year I did for 3 days. But this year I've been focusing on just one cosplay because I'm actually entering the cosplay contest this Saturday. So I'm testing out the cosplay I'm using for Saturday right now.
Is there anything that you suggest a newbie for
Gen Con goes to, or is there anything in particular I should check out, any really good booths?
Since you're not big into anime, I would suggest one of the events that's actually Saturday around 8 is the Mystery Anime 3000 Theater.
Okay.
They play a certain anime movie and the dub do their own subbing over it, like the
Mystery Science Theater.
Yeah, that's okay. What I was thinking, yes.
All right, cool. All right, then. Cool, I'll do that. Thank you.
It's on the replay.
And you are Todd. All right, and how many times have you been to Gen Con?
It's my first time.
Okay, cool. This is my first time also. And actually, I'm sitting here at the table that and where a game of Low Life has just finished. And I noticed that you had the Whole Hole and also the new edition of Low Life.
Right.
So you're obviously familiar with the world that Andy has created.
I am, yeah.
Is this your first gaming convention? Have you been to other gaming conventions?
I went to Origins 2 or 3 months ago, and that's where I played the first game of Low Life with Andy.
Okay. Have you played Low Life since that one? Or
no, I haven't done any role-playing since Origins.
So you're going to squeeze as much as you can into these 4 days, right?
Right? Yeah, yeah.
All right, what do you like about Gen Con? Just with this, just from day one?
I don't know, I like the opportunity to play a lot of smaller, like, indie games.
Yeah.
As opposed to, because locally I can find Pathfinder and Shadowrun, but here there's Savage Worlds and some smaller games.
That's something that I've noticed walking through the vendors venue. You see Catalyst, and you see a lot of the big name games, gaming companies. But I start to see all these smaller companies. It's surprising how there's huge followings, and you could tell that people, like in the entrepreneurs area is what they're calling it. It seems like that area is getting as much attention. And it's off in their own little corner as the bigger areas. So you've obviously, you're a gamer, so you played some of the bigger stuff. Do you have a preference for the smaller companies now?
I'm starting to like, yeah, I think Savage World is top of my list now.
Okay.
I'm really starting to like the system, so that's... And that was actually how I got into the Low Life, because I looked for Savage Worlds at Origins, and I saw Andy's game. I had never heard of Low Life, so... Signed up for it, and then I bought the Low Life book online.
Right. Savage Worlds was the...
That was the gateway.
That was the gateway.
Yeah, and it brought me into Low Life, yeah.
That's kind of funny.
It is. It's strange. I like the generic, and I like that it's not... GURPS is pretty dense. You know, its character creation can take quite a lot of time.
Yeah.
It seems like with Savage Worlds, you can... achieve almost the same effect at, you know, a fraction of the time.
My wife, she likes role-playing games. She hates character creation.
Mm-hmm.
But Savage Worlds, like when she was creating her character for Low Life,
yeah.
She loved it. And it seems like it doesn't matter what level gamer you are, if you're experienced or if you're novice, that it lends itself to everybody, and that there's that playing field where you don't feel, even if you're a newbie, you don't feel like, oh, I don't know what I'm doing. It's like, yeah, roll the dice.
Right.
You have this basic set. Doom, move forward. So, cool. Are you looking forward to doing more, like with Low Life, or doing probably definitely more Savage World stuff while you're here? Or are you going to be hopping around some other stuff?
Yeah, I have some Savage Worlds games lined up. I have a Fate Core, too. That's another system I like.
Okay.
I've got a Eclipse Phase and a Pathfinder game lined up.
And then
it's
the
all
meantime,
role-playing, though. I'm not doing any war gaming. Or, you know,
no war gaming.
No war games. No.
You're all RPG.
Yep.
Thank you for your time, and happy con.
Yeah, you too.
Right.
Okay, Geeksters. Now, that was, like Kylan said, that was some of the attendees that were there. But, Kylan, this is being a gaming convention.
Yes.
Did you see any, like, was there any major new games or anything that you saw that you either got to play or you got to just see happen that was you saw there?
Well, I was... No, fortunate to get to interview a couple of companies. There was one company in particular that is working on a Kickstarter for a new game. It's called Folklore the Affliction. This is a game by Greenbrier Games, which
they had a really nice booth. So I got like they gave me a booth tour, and also they gave me this really awesome introduction to this game, which the only way I can describe it is like a seamless mix of RPG and tabletop gaming. It's seamless.
Okay.
And as you guys listen to the interview, hopefully you're able to get all of it. I believe there may have been some.
Yeah, there's some. I think I had to cut out a little bit because it just the audio got real bad. There's a couple of these interviews, Geeksters, that we're still learning this equipment. But we have as much as we could get of it for you. There's a couple places where the audio goes a little weird, but I've tried to clean up as much as I could.
Right. So yeah, check this out. Also, there are pictures that are either posted on K&K or they will be posted on K&K as well of the set. So
okay. This one actually is in two parts right now. So you guys are going to hear both parts before we come back.
Ready to roll.
All right. Folklore of the Affliction is a dark fantasy, classical horror adventure board game with a role-playing feel. It's for 2 to 5 players. No game master is required.
Okay.
It plays a lot like a overworld adventure-based storyline. Mm-hmm. You will go through the storybook, pick a story to play with your group.
All right.
And you would move from place to place dictated by the story. Go to a place of interest. For instance, Goran Tombs here. Once you get to the tombs or the place of interest, it would glow up or zoom in as a dungeon crawler.
Okay.
So then you would bring your miniatures out. We have a full line of 3D modeled miniatures, which are absolutely gorgeous.
All right.
I'll show them to you over here.
Oh, I see. Okay, nice.
And the characters are highly customizable. You choose a character. We have super intuitive play. We designed this game so that if you want to play the Witch Hunter, boom, you grab the card. You grab his corresponding booklet. You open it. You look here. You pick a path. You can be the Inquisitor or the Bounty Hunter as a Witch Hunter. So it gives you a special focus and power for the remainder of the time you play him. You open it up. You have his abilities that he comes with and his starting weapon, in addition to unique things that only the Witch Hunter can do.
Okay.
You have his level up track on the back with all the lore. As you gain it, you would gain points to customize your character and more abilities.
Right.
If you look back on the front, we have that the Witch Hunter can be either Bounty Hunter or Inquisitor. And while he goes up his track, that can actually fork and change what abilities you get per level.
Okay. All right.
So that's intuitive startup. The unique thing about this game that you won't see in any other game is that when you die, you're not out of the game, you become a ghost.
Oh, okay.
And so you play on as your ghost. Every one of these cards flips over, and it has their ghost side. With the ghost form, we're planning to make translucent versions of our core players.
Okay.
So that you would pull your miniature off, put the translucent one on.
All right.
And you can play on as your ghost.
Nice.
You get
and you maintain, like, if in this case, if I was the Inquisitor, I'll continue to be the Inquisitor, but just in ghost form.
Absolutely. So okay. You'll see if I put the Madman next to the Inquisitor or even the Exorcist here, they're all a little bit different.
Right.
The Exorcist is a little bit more spiritual oriented. He actually gets a little bit more powerful with his base attacks as a ghost.
Right.
Every one of them have a little bit of a different profile.
All right.
with their powers as a ghost too. So what the Exorcist has at his disposal would be different from what the Avenging Madman has at his disposal.
Right.
For powers that they can use in the afterlife.
Okay. Right.
You get 10 ghost points. You can be hit and still hit in combat against creatures as a ghost.
All right.
So when they hit you, they actually drain your ghost points. You can drain your own ghost points to power these abilities.
All right.
Okay? But if you run out of them, you go into limbo. You're kind of essentially really dead.
Right.
All right? If you're a ghost, you can get back to town or find a physician. They can bring you back to life.
Okay.
Okay? If you're a ghost and you run out of ghost points, you go to limbo. You can't be brought back by any physician.
All right.
You have to find the gypsies. They usually camp outside every town. They will bring you back with mystical powers,
mm-hmm.
but they make you take a tarot card. And that stays with your character and dictates their destiny to some degree.
Oh, okay, yep. Okay. So it seems to be a pretty deep game.
Absolutely.
How long, so what would you say an average, let's say a game with 3 people, how long would something like that run?
You know what, Colin, I'll back up a second and just kind of talk about the development of the game. We started development a little bit over 5 years ago.
Okay.
Okay, this is actually designed as a whole game world with a lot of background lore. We actually just signed with Ed Greenwood's group, the creator of the Forgotten Realms.
Oh, okay.
He'll be writing novels and a whole RPG for this.
Oh, really? Okay, absolutely. Great.
Yep. So But to go back to the game length, that actually varies. If you're going to play short stories, you choose which story you want to play.
Okay.
So if you want to play a shorter story, it's somewhere around an hour, hour and a half.
Mm-hmm.
If you're going to play a long multi-chapter story, it could be 3 or 4 hours.
Right.
But they're broken up into chapters conveniently so you can stop.
And how many stories come with the game?
We're looking at about 6 multi-chaptered stories.
Oh, okay.
Now, if you take a look at the storybook here,
right,
you can open it up and realize that the first story is built as a tutorial. So you really don't even have to open up the rule book.
Oh.
You can just start playing. Oh, there's a skill check here right away. You look at the green box, read the green box, it'll tell you how to make that story check.
All right.
Skill check.
All right.
And you move on and just read the green boxes if you want to learn how to play without even having to open up the actual rule book.
Okay.
If you want to read that section, it references the rule book pages, so you can do that.
All right.
But the intuitiveness is what we're striving for here.
Exactly.
In every aspect of this game.
Exactly.
Pick it up, play it. You don't have to have one person read that whole rule book to run this game because there is no game master. Everyone who sits down at the table plays.
Cool.
Okay.
And how many, in this set, how many different characters are you starting out with that there are to choose from?
Sure, there's going to be between 5 and 6 main characters to start with.
Okay.
We have a lineup of expansion characters that are also going to be available, likely during the Kickstarter.
Okay.
Okay. We have very iconic characters such as the Exorcist you've seen. The Witch Hunter,
mm-hmm.
the Avenging Madman, who finds that his entire family... He's got a great backstory, by the way.
Oh!
He's a real favorite, okay? So the Madman was a farmer who, after a long day's work, fell asleep in his barn. He wakes up the next morning only to realize that his entire family was slaughtered.
Oh,
okay.
Okay.
He tracks the killers to this land. He's lost his mind over the grief, so he's the Avenging Madman.
All right.
All of his abilities are geared towards his derangement. So he'll even one of his abilities lets him make an extra attack to bite their foes and stuff like that. And he carries a hand weapon, which is the bale hook he left the barn with. So he's just a real favorite.
Great.
He has an ability called the Environmental Slaughter, where if something gets slain next to him, he can tear a limb off that and smash it into the creature next to them. So he's a lot of fun, very dynamic. So the Madman is there. We have the Arcanist, which... is a seeker of secrets. So she studies numerology, the Kabbalah, everything she can get her hands on, and essentially tries to ride the line. How deep can I go into this without really going to the dark side?
Okay.
So she really grasps a lot of those powers on some level.
Right.
So she can function with and still be a protagonist.
Gotcha.
You know? Wherever you want to be, the framework works.
Yes.
You know? So it's really exciting for me to really bring that to the players. And have them have a good time with it.
So along with the tabletop aspect and the RPG aspect, there's that bit of that nostalgia, that cultural upbringing that we all share.
Yeah, and whether it's mine, whether it's yours, whether it's someone else's, it all fits.
Right.
That's why we had such a great time talking to Ed Greenwood because that's where he really got excited about this.
Right.
Hey, we can get authors and their ideas from Japan, from South America, from Africa, wherever, and we can really plug it in and have a great time with this.
Great.
Yep.
And you guys are on Facebook, right? So what's your Facebook page?
Yeah, it's Folklore the Affliction, Facebook / folkloretheaffliction.com.
Okay, great.
That's one word.
Great. Well, I know that I'm certainly going to be looking forward to this, and our listeners... Or because we have gamers that are also listening to our podcast, they're going to be listening to this too, and we'll be as we find out information, and we'll let everybody know about the Kickstarter as well.
Great. Look for it in September.
Nino, right?
Yes.
All right. Thank you, Nino.
Appreciate it.
Right.
Thanks, Colin.
All right.
Okay, Geeksters, that sounds like an awesome game. One we're definitely going to want to have to try out here once it's actually available. Next up, we got actually a couple of mobile apps that. Kind of found at the con.
Right.
Give us a quick description, and then we'll actually throw it back to the guys here with Sirenscape, and they'll tell us about it more.
Well, there are times when you're either, playing a tabletop game or an RPG or, something, and you would like to have a little bit of, ambient music going on. Or sound effects. Well, this Benjamin Loams of Sirenscape created an app strictly for that purpose, and it can fit any kind of situation. If you're on a starship, he has something for that. If you're in a medieval town, he has something for that. If you're in the zombie apocalypse, he has something for that. So this, and there's new content coming around all the time. In fact, he was present at Gen Con recording a, I guess what you would say is a dragon attack upon Gen Con. And so I heard, and I was there, and I heard him, like, do this scream. It was like this blood-curdling scream coming out of this this rather thin Australian gentleman. And then, but then we start talking, oh, hey, how you doing? It's very personable. But he has this amazing voice. And so this is the kind of app that I know when I'm playing certain games, I'm a music person. I love having that added bit of texture to my gameplay. And so this app is ideal for that. So the interview explains the story behind Sirenscape and why the geeksters should install it on their phones. All right, so I'm here with Benjamin Looms.
Yep.
And we're here to talk about Sirenscape.
Yay!
Yay, great. All right, two for two. So what is it?
Sirenscape is a gorgeous-looking, easy-to-use app that creates sound effects and music for tabletop games.
Oh, great. So this is, now will this work with pretty much any tabletop, or are we talking a specific genre?
We've got a fantasy player, which you can run on iPhone or iPad, Android devices, PC, and Mac. In that player, there's a whole host of fantasy locations, so medieval towns, dripping dungeons, the high seas, and then battles with all sorts of fantasy creatures in those locations. So pirates and dragons and ghouls and everything you could possibly imagine. Plus, there's a sci-fi player as well. So every location you can imagine there, so laser guns and cyberpunk mechs and all that sort of thing.
Awesome. So, and I guess if you just happen to be in the mood to listen to it, it's perfect for just relaxing, too.
Yeah, yeah. Because it's a non-repetitive generative system, it actually improvises the sound. It picks up big batches of samples and places them in surround sound, always with randomized elements. It's not just a 15-minute recording of the one location. Because it's actually seamless and continuous and never repeating, you can, yeah, put on the rainforest sound and just let it run gently in the background, or I sometimes go to the deck of a spaceship and have that running in the background. Music sometimes comes in and plays a song. You know, there's a little droid in the corner. And what's cool about Sirenscape is this, you can actually adjust all those individual elements. So you could turn off the music. You can make the music louder. You could make the droid turn off. You can even set off individual events if you like. So like a warning signal or an explosion or a laser gun shot.
Oh, awesome. And how long has this app been around?
We released about 2 years ago.
Okay.
I was really just looking for something for my own table because I looked out there. I was sort of playing with lists of playlists and songs and movie soundtracks and trying all sorts of things to kind of bring some that movie-like soundtrack to the table.
Right.
And finding it was taking more and more of my attention away from the players. So I just really wanted an easy solution, a sort of a single-touch solution for bringing into life the audio at my table. So I just built something for me, pretty much. And people really liked it.
Well, when I was reading up on it, I'm like, if I'm reading this right, this seems really, really cool. I mean, because it seems like, you know, when you're playing a game that's like maybe, let's say, horror, a horror game, and you're sitting there, and, you know, you kind of got, you know, if you're with the right group, you're getting that feel, you kind of getting, your heart is kind of going a little bit, and that music would just be the right punch.
And not just music, either. So with a horror sound set, like one we have, we'll have sort of just a knocking sound on a door somewhere in the distance, you know, sort of almost subliminal. And so there's a basic fight and flight response from a human that can't be avoided, which tunes you on and turns you sort of up and immerses you in the situation.
Awesome.
So yeah, you know, making people feel uncomfortable is a very important part of a horror game. And audio is obviously a massively important component in that.
Yes, and I assume that, like, like you said, it's not just same 15-minute track that's going over and over. And so there are many times that get updates, so there's always new stuff going on.
That's right.
All right, cool. And
Do you have any plans further, like anything else?
Yeah, exciting things just recently. So say you've got your fight, your bugbears have attacked the medieval town, you've turned on some of the rain from the storm sound set that we released, and a bit of thunder. Mm-hmm. You've mixed all that right and saved that as a preset. The game's running. So that's what the game master is doing. He's setting that whole environment. The women are screaming. Things are getting exploded and smashed.
Right.
We've got it all happening nicely. What's really cool just at the last month is that we've got the PCs, the players, can actually have their own sounds as well. So they've got Sirenscape sitting there on their iPhone. They've got a wizard sound set ready with tons of spells. So instead of saying, I cast Fireball, all they have to do is just reach over and touch the Fireball sound, and there's this huge explosion of flame crackling, and that actually is how they cast their Fireball now. Everyone knows they've cast Fireball because it's an unmistakable sound of death. They roll the dice at the same time, and then they've got the damage to find out how effective it is.
So awesome.
There's also slashing sounds for someone playing a rogue, for instance.
That's right.
The sound of the rapier being drawn, and then the sound of it swooshing through the air, and then the sound of it making contact.
Right.
And the sound of rope, sort of a rope being climbed up.
Oh.
All those sorts of things. So that's really cool. The players can have a go now as well.
So I can tell you had a lot of fun, like, with the concept of this and developing it. And I just coming by, I heard you, like, recording something. Oh. So are you responsible for all the audio in
that's
that?
Right. I do all the fantasy audio too. We use voice actors from around the world. And what has been super cool fun here at this Gen Con is we've been recording the sounds of people who have come up and volunteered their sounds.
Oh, really?
We've actually been recording the sound of Gen Con. We're making an official Monster and Dragon raid on Gen Con.
Oh!
We've got the normal sounds of Gen Con running. I've made a few field recordings of the room in general. And then we've got sort of, hawkers sort of selling things. Someone came and said, kidneys, 3 for $1. Kidneys, you never know when you need a spare kidney. So the way Sirenscape works is you'll just have the general bobble, and then just every now and then you'll get one of those sounds sort of happens to play, and maybe you hear it.
Right.
And then you hit dragon attack and all hell will break loose, and you've got people screaming and crying and, kids sort of telling the grown-ups to stop running away. People complaining that their foam weapons are, relatively ineffective against a dragon hide. So, yeah, that'll be super fun to mix up.
Oh, I'm telling you right now, as soon as this interview is over, I'm installing an app on my phone, and I will search for the raid on Gen Con.
Yeah.
Well,
as soon as it comes out, you'll hear about it, that's for sure.
Oh, cool. And, well, I'll try not to be too scared. the listeners were really excited. I'm pretty sure as our listeners listen to this, they're going to be adding that app also.
Go to sirenscape.com, sirinscape.com. You can download the app for free without even having to register or anything. Mm. And since you're here at Gen Con, I'll give you the free Gen Con code we've been giving away, which is free stuff. Use that as a voucher on the link on the front page, and you can get even more free stuff that comes with the app. Give it a try, and then you can, look at all the video demos to see if you want to buy some stuff or subscribe.
Awesome. Great. Well, thank you for your time, and I hope you're having an excellent convention.
Oh, I am. It's super fun.
All right. Well, Geeksters, that's it, and let's keep gaming.
Okay, Geeksters, so be sure to check out Cinescape. It's a free download on the App Store and the iTunes App Store and the Android App Store.
Right. So Google Play.
Google Play. So next up, we actually had an interview with a company that was there called Warpo Toys. These guys were awesome. I've seen some of the pictures Kylan took of these, and it's fantastic. So what kind of toys were they, Kylan?
They were... They held back to the action figures that were present in the late 70s, early 80s. So, you have, like, the bubble with the card.
Mm-hmm.
And so
similar to their vintage Kenner toys.
Yeah, something along the lines of that. So, and these toys were designed, or the action figures were designed and produced in the same way, using the same technology that was present, during that time.
But more importantly, what's the genre and storyline they're going with?
This first one is Cthulhu. Okay.
So you can actually get the 3 3/4 scale Cthulhu action figures.
Yes.
For lovers of Lovecraft and all things Cthulhu.
And I mean, like,
And the truth is, I mean, if you really think about it, it seems like it seems like Cthulhu should have been around at that point. It really should have, because,
well, the stories were, they should have had action figures then.
Right, you know, and the one property that I could say that these character or these figures reminded me most of were the figures from Clash of the Titans. They had that level of authenticity, and even the giant Cthulhu. When you look at the giant Cthulhu, and there's a picture that I have of that, it reminded me of the giant Kraken that was part of the Clash of the Titans playset there. It was amazing just to sit there. It's like I said in the interview, I know for a fact that these toys didn't exist at that point, but they look like they should have existed. Okay. Yeah, so, yeah.
Awesome. So, Geeksters, this interview, I wasn't able to clean up much, but you should still be able to hear it, even with the audio problems we had with it. But we'll see you back in a couple of minutes, then.
I am here with Brian Ketzel. Ketzel. Yeah, yep. I got it right. Of Warpo.
Yep.
Now, tell our listeners what Warpo is and what do you guys do.
So, Warpo was started by three friends that collected toys, but also have been in the toy industry, for about 25 years combined.
Okay.
We were really disillusioned with the types of retro toys that were being offered on the market.
Right.
And saw we saw an opportunity to be able to make something new that hasn't really been done before. So we make toys with a philosophy of trying to role play, or what we call it is method manufacture, much like method acting.
Right.
The products that we make. So we'll choose a certain era, and then we will put ourselves in the mindset of the manufacturers that were making toys back then, and try and kind of take an artisanal route to making those products as close as we can.
Right.
So we'll work with artists that were around during that era. We will try and use the processes that they would have used back in the day and make business decisions kind of the same way that they would have then.
Right.
And so the first line that we put out is Legends of Cthulhu.
Right.
That was our first product line that we kind of applied that philosophy to.
And what era are you channeling with Legends of Cthulhu?
Yeah, so Legends of Cthulhu, we were putting ourselves about 1979 to 1981.
Yeah, I get that vibe.
Yeah, and we were imagining if a toy company like Kenner got a hold of the Lovecraft books, stories, and, you know, it's not too big of a leap that Lovecraft could have gotten infused in that time. You know, it was
That's true.
Huge time for sword and sorcery.
Right.
There was a lot going on with that fantasy area, and, you know, Lovecraft's mythos kind of inspired Gary Gygax to do a lot of his work,
right.
Stephen King, and all those guys that were popular during the time. So when we started looking into making toys about Cthulhu, we were actually kind of surprised that no one had really taken the Lovecraft property or the Lovecraft mythos and really wrapped their arms around it and created
right.
a full-on brand. You know,
right.
It just hadn't been done before.
It seems like there were some, like they were hidden around it. I think looking at your figures, it reminds me of the way the figures look for the Clash of the Titans.
Yes.
All right. So,
thank you.
Yeah. So, and I loved. Now I remember the when you had the Gorgon and
Kraken,
and the Kraken, and those characters are you have the card, and I'm looking. You have the blister. You have the card there, and
yeah.
And so we're of the same generation. So it kind of harkens back, and I'm feeling a little nostalgic, but in the best way possible.
Good. Good. Yeah.
Looking back on it, it really is interesting that the Cthulhu mythos wasn't incorporated in some way. Well, I mean, like I said, they took elements of it, but like you said, this could have easily have existed in 1979, 1980.
Right. That's great. That's good to hear, because
yeah.
that's what, you know, when we were starting our company and really talking it through, retro toys in modern day, you know, modern day form are traditionally either a toy company will go and find an old product line that hasn't been made and make it again,
right,
you know,
right.
Or they will get an old license and then make new versions of those toys,
yes,
you know?
Yeah.
And we believe that it's possible that you can go back to those eras and tell new stories and start new properties that didn't exist but feel as if they were inserted right during that time, you know?
Yeah, I mean, okay, like, I mean, even, I mean, you guys are legit all the way down to the font. I mean, like yeah. You know, the Warpo font and Geeksters, I'm going to take a picture of this so you guys can see what I'm talking about. The Warpo font is straight out of what you would see on the header of a 1980s arcade.
Yeah.
And even like the posters here, looks like something that would have been in Heavy Metal magazine.
Yeah, so Ken, we worked with Ken Kelly specifically for all the artwork on the card and for the posters that you're looking at. Ken
right.
Kelly was nephew of Frazetta.
Okay.
Studied under Frazetta for a number of years and did a lot of creepy and eerie kind of covers.
Yes, yes.
Did the toy artwork for Micronauts, Manglores, the LJN Advanced Dungeons and Dragons. Remember the Tiamat that
yes,
was done?
Yes.
That was his painting on
oh,
there.
Okay.
And Kiss Destroyer. So
I remember all this. Yeah.
We wanted to work with guys that were around at that time. He was still painting on oil on canvas, you know. So
right.
It's just another piece that it gives us, you know, authority or authenticity to our nostalgia that we're bringing. You
right.
Know?
And are you getting a really? Actually, I can tell because we were here together on Wednesday. Everybody was setting up, and I get the feeling that you're getting a really good reception.
Yeah, yeah. Gen Con is definitely our people. I mean, these. This audience has grown up with Lovecraft, you know,
yes.
In their role-playing games and their books, you know.
Right.
We hardly have to explain who Cthulhu is here, you know.
Oh.
At comic book shows like San Diego or stuff, not a lot of people know who Cthulhu is, you know.
Right.
It's surprising. But here, everybody knows who Cthulhu is, you
yeah.
know.
I am, yes. I have to admit, I can't tell you how many times I would walk down the aisle and I would look and I would want to hang out here. And I said, no, I have to wait a couple of days. Just because everything is so cool. And is this a box set of everything? Yeah.
We launched with 4 3¾-inch figures.
Okay.
That landed in like January of this year.
Mm-hmm.
And now we just have announced we've gone into production on the 12-inch Cthulhu. So this is our Kraken box.
Okay.
Our Clash of the Titans, think Castle Grayskull box or Millennium Falcon, where you've got the litho label on the front and then the two-color printing on the corrugate, you know.
And even the kid, even the way the kid is drawn. This... Are you sure you didn't get this from 1981?
We have some sort of a secret time-traveling machine that we're using. But that 12-inch Cthulhu fits perfectly with the rest of the 3¾-inch line. So the Professor fits right into the Great Old One's hand, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And all the other figures, you know, are all within scale or at least pretty close. This is our, you know, this is our Rancor for the line. And he'll be shipping in November.
Okay, great.
In Diamond Previews right now, so your local comic book stores can order it, or BigBadToyStore.com, you can pre-order.
Great. And do you have a Facebook page?
Yes, we do. It is Warpo Toys, so / Warpo Toys, or, you know, you can get to all of our socials through Warpo.com, WARPO.com.
Awesome. Well, I'm geeking out like hardcore. Look at all this, and I know this didn't exist when I was 10 or 11, but I could have sworn it existed. You know, cognitively, I know it didn't, but the quality is there. The art, the style of the art, it doesn't feel like, oh, we're gonna try to make it look. No, this is how it looks.
Right. Cool.
And so, awesome. Well. thank you for your time.
No problem. Thank you.
And Geeksters, all you Cthulhu fans, if you want to kick it up to another level, check this out. It's awesome. And check the page for all the pics.
Okay, Geeksters, so that was Warpo Toys. That's something that's probably going to be in all of our, up on all of our shelves as soon as we're able to get a hold of the toys. But the next one was actually a real big get for an interview for Kylan. He actually got an interview with James Sutter, one of the creators of Pathfinder and one of the executive editors now, correct?
Yeah.
For Paizo.
For Paizo, yeah. So. Paizo Games, which Paizo has a huge presence at Gen Con. They were one of the sponsors of the con. And so this was a major, major interview for me. James is a really cool guy. He's, you know, along with, you know, being a major figure in the gaming world, he's a writer, he's a musician. He seems like he's always doing something. And so it was really, it was awesome to just take a few minutes of his time to talk to him. And I hope that that comes out through this interview.
All right, and I am here with James Sutter. After doing backflips, you know, you made time for me to talk with you. Actually, I really enjoyed the panel.
Oh, thank you.
Actually, I'm a writer, and a lot of our listeners at Geek Watch One are either writers or they're really into the fantasy world, and a lot of them are players of Pathfinder.
Oh, cool.
All right, so I guess my question would be, I heard you talking about, looking at things from a player's perspective.
Yes.
And so is that your background? I guess if you could take me to the beginning, where did you, get into gaming?
How did I get into all of this?
Yeah, and then forward.
Yeah.
Yeah,
well, I mean, I've always, I've always been a gamer. You know, I learned how to play Dungeons & Dragons First Edition when I was in fifth grade. You know, I had my fifth grade teacher taught us how to play, which was just the coolest thing ever.
Oh, awesome.
And then I played all up through high school and college. And then, after college, I thought I was going to do journalism. You know, it had never occurred to me that I could make a living doing this sort of thing.
Right.
But I was working in newspaper and magazines and then kind of stumbled upon Dungeon and Dragon magazines and Amazing Stories, which was based, Paizo is also based in Seattle, where I live.
Right.
And so I went, oh my God, that's so much cooler than everything I'm doing now. And so I basically just, applied and threw myself at it and actually worked my way up. I mean, I started out at Paizo doing customer service stuff and then writing on the side while I was still doing journalism.
Right.
And then sort of slowly transitioned from writing about the real world into writing about made-up worlds.
Right.
Then I worked on Dungeon as an editor for a while, and then when we created Pathfinder, I worked my way up being both a developer and an editor there, and now I'm the executive editor.
And so it seems like it worked out to be a fairly seamless transition to go from gamer to writer, which we know that.
Yeah.
A lot of us know that. But then to go from that into now game developing.
Sure, yeah.
And so, so here you are now. And,
yeah.
And Pathfinder is huge.
Yeah.
And I guess, where do you see going forward from here?
Well, I'm really having... I'm still... Sorry, my voice is totally shot.
Oh, no, it's the fourth day where... Yeah.
Yeah. I'm really still enjoying, just watching... being part of the Paizo gestalt, as the company grows and Pathfinder grows. I mean, it wasn't that many years ago where we were all sitting at the... standing desperately at the booth at Gen Con, and people would come by and say, what's Pathfinder? And now everybody wants to tell us about their character, right?
Right.
So, I'm really enjoying that. But I also, as much as I love Pathfinder, I like to do a lot of different stuff.
Right.
So I write novels, I write short stories, I write comics. I really like to diversify and write a little bit of everything.
Right.
And so I continue to do that both for Paizo and just for my own creator-owned stuff.
Yeah, I noticed that that a lot of your stuff has shown up in... short story anthologies. And now, do you tend to try to And then I know some of it is some of it's fantasy. Seem like there's some of it maybe horror.
Oh yeah, I do fantasy, horror, science fiction, a little bit of everything.
Cool.
Because I feel like for me, variety keeps things fresh.
Right.
And so I really enjoy doing all that. And I was writing short stories and selling them to anthologies and stuff before I became a game designer.
Right.
I was doing that, from college on.
Right.
I knew I always wanted to be a writer, and the realization that a writer could write for games, too, actually, it's the sort of thing that when you're 12, it's totally obvious. Like, oh, of course I can grow up and be a game designer. And then, sort of that got beat out of me during high school and college, and it wasn't until a few years after that I went, wait a minute, wait, this is actually an option? Oh, man, I'm totally doing this. Like, and then from there, there's definitely no easy road into it.
Right.
Like, you really kind of got to work your way up and just throw yourself at it. But the good news is that the gaming industry is one where there's always new companies bubbling up. There's always new stuff going on. And so you can just sort of, maybe you can't walk up to Paizo or Wizards of the Coast and say, I've never done anything before, but I'd like to write a setting book for you. But, there are publishers that are, third-party publishers using the OGL or, the Pathfinder license.
Right.
And you can often go to them and say, hey, I'm pretty new, but can I show you what I can do?
Right.
And so that's the same sort of thing with, short stories. I worked my way up from writing for, websites or magazines where there was basically no payment to, well, now you get a penny a word. Now you get 2 cents a word, Now you get 5 or 10 cents a word. You really can build your way up.
Right.
And so I've been doing this for 12 years, something like that. And so you just come up slow or fast, as the case may be. But you got to put in the work.
Right. Well, and actually, I have to ask you because I'm a huge fan of Wesley Chu. I didn't know he was here. Now, looking, I saw it because my wife was checking out stuff, and she was checking the Twitter feed, in fact. And so I was looking, I'm like, so what is it like hanging out with Wesley Chu? He seems like he's a little crazy.
Oh, no. Wes is great. He's really funny, but actually, one of the things I love about Gen Con is the Gen Con Writers Symposium.
Right.
Is a fabulous place to meet authors, talk to them, go to panels.
Yeah. Like,
it's the best part of the show, in my opinion, especially if you're a writer.
You're living the dream.
Yeah.
You're serious about it, but you're living the dream.
Exactly.
Right.
And that's the balance that I think that basically all fiction writers or game designers have, is like, it is a business, and it's a tough business.
Yes.
It's
yeah.
really hard business. The people who can actually make a living, are the lucky ones and have gotten there, through biting and clawing and a lot of self-discipline. But it's also super creative. It's also super fun. And, at the end of the day, you've produced something you can really be proud of.
And for the fans, it comes out. And you feel that. And you see that. And it draws you even more into that world. And well, thank you.
Well, thank you.
And I hope you had a great con.
Yeah, it was awesome.
Right.
And please do, send me a link when you put it up. And actually, if the audience is interested, you can always find me on Twitter at James L. Sutter. That's how we coordinated this. Or on my website at jameslsutter.com.
Right. Well, geeksters, you heard it here. And that's it.
And that was James Sutter. I hope you guys enjoyed that interview. And, now it's all about where you are at the right time, at the right place. I happened to get a interesting bit of news on Saturday night regarding a property that is very near and dear to my heart. And I knew I wanted to follow up and possibly buy said property on Sunday morning, last day of the con. So I went to the Savage Worlds booth, only to discover that what I was looking for wasn't available for purchase, but the president of the company, Shane Hensley, was there.
Shane Hensley
was there, and so he agreed to an interview. So this was a major scoop for Geek Watch 1. He announced that
Well, why don't we let Shane tell us on the interview, and then we'll talk about it when we come back.
Yeah, you know what? We'll just let you guys listen for yourselves, and we'll be right back. Okay, and all right. This is Kylan, and I'm here with
Shane Hensley.
And you're with Savage Worlds. Are you one of the creators?
I'm the president of Pinnacle and the original creator of Savage Worlds, yep.
And Savage Worlds, for a lot of our listeners who they're also big fans of the low life game. Yeah. So a lot of us are familiar with the Savage Worlds system. Mm-hmm. So you made a really big announcement yesterday here at Gen Con. So what was that?
We made a couple, actually. We have three licenses we're pretty excited about. One is The Fear Agent, which is a comic book series from Dark Horse Comics, which is kind of a sarcastic sci-fi space opera. It's just a fantastic read if you ever get a chance to do so. We also announced The Goon, which is Eric Powell's brilliant masterpiece, also from Dark Horse Comics, which is kind of a pulp crime noir, right, tongue-in-cheek horror book. But maybe the biggest announcement, and certainly the one that's gotten the most attention today, is Flash Gordon. I'm a huge fan of the original Alex Raymond Flash Gordon, and of course the Sam Jones movie from the 80s. You know, that was my prime of life, so it was fantastic.
Well, when I heard that, we were playing a game, and one of our friends actually has the poster from the Sam Jones movie as his wallpaper, and we're like, what? And so we're like, I think there was a, we're both racing to get here, and I beat him. So, although I know he's going to be coming in to ask you about it too. So, so this is going to be a companion module, or
it'll be its own setting and a complete line. We'll do all the different planets of Mongo and the factions, and what we're envisioning, and we've just started. But what we're envisioning is it's essentially the Alex Raymond original strips world, spiced with the flavor of the movie in there for all of those all of us who are fans of it.
Okay, great. So, I assume you remembered the animated series that ran, it only ran for what, one season actually, or was it two seasons?
It seems like there's two. I've seen one.
So now that was closer to the Alex Raymond.
Mm-hmm.
So the people who are fans of that will get that part. But like you said, if you happen to like the aspects from certain
movie. But I would say the truth is, much like anything we do, we'll take all of it collectively,
right,
which we have the rights to everything. And make what we think is the best version of it for Savage Worlds and for our gamers and for guys and gals, you know, our age group who want to play it today. So you're going to see all of those things in there. The tone will be, you know, serious at times and campy at times, and every now and then you'll hear Flash, we only have 14 hours to save the Earth.
And along with Prince Volton, an impetuous boy.
That's right. It's such a quotable movie. You're going to see it over and over. And interestingly, having just recently reread all of the strips in preparation for this project, a lot of those lines are actually from the 1940 strips.
See, now I'm going to have to go and find that. Because
yeah.
I was a fan. I love the strips. And so it has been a long time since I've read any of that. So
yeah, there's collections right from 1935 on. There's a series by Checker and another by IDW. The best, I'm told, is by Titan. They actually went out and found pristine copies of the newspapers and scanned them from there.
Oh, really? Okay, so for our listeners, we're looking at how soon can we see the first?
We're probably a year out since we just finalized everything and got it announced for the show.
All right, so a year out, so that gives our listeners a year to do your tutorials. To read the strips.
That's right.
If you can, find the animated series. And, of course, you know, sprinkle a couple of viewings of the classic 1980s movie.
Heck yeah.
In there. Well, I'm excited. I know that everybody that I was with last night is excited. And we're going to just let everybody know. And thank you for taking
the
time.
Yeah, thank you, buddy. Everything old is new again, right?
That's right. All right, and thanks, Geeksters. Looking forward to more Flash in our lives.
All right.
Okay, Geeksters, we want to thank Shane Hensley for giving us that chance to get an interview with him. This is the type of thing you get to do when you're at Gen Con, a show this big. You get to talk to the executive editors of these companies. You get to talk to the presidents of the companies. They're out there on the floor with the rest of us. But how about that news, Kylan? The new properties.
When I heard that they were creating properties in the Flash Gordon universe, Saturday night, I lost it. I lost it because I couldn't believe that. I was just like, I get to play in this world now? And so that's the reason why, like, I rushed to that booth. I was going to buy. I didn't care how much it cost. I was going to buy.
Well, the thing is with Flash Gordon, some people don't realize how old Flash Gordon goes back to the 1920s.
Yeah,
without Flash Gordon, you don't have Star Wars.
No.
Without Flash Gordon, you didn't have Star Trek.
No.
A lot of these, what we know as modern science fiction, you don't know, or you don't get without having Flash Gordon, without having guys like Edgar Rice Burroughs' Mars series with John Carter.
Right.
All these guys that created what we know as science fiction.
Right. Well, I mean, last year, Flash, turned 75?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Last year, Flash Gordon turned 75. 75 years old. 75 years of Flash. I couldn't believe it. And so, you know, to be able to... I was just done. I was just done. And,
okay. And come on, most geeks know the movie from, was it 1980,
81? Yeah.
The Sam Jones Flash Gordon, which is awesome. I don't care how kitschy it is, how B movie it is. It's a fantastic movie,
and it had a fantastic soundtrack.
Oh yeah,
yes,
absolutely. Queen was amazing doing the soundtrack.
So I mean that introduced so many of us to that world,
right?
But now if you go back, you can just go on the internet and look for the old serials of Flash Gordon.
Oh yeah,
they're really short to watch, 5-10 minutes, whatever, right. And they're like the whole old school cliffhanger. You know, how's he going to get out of this at the end? And then in the next episode, all of a sudden, something changed from the end, and he totally survives.
I believe it was also Flash Gordon. It was either Flash Gordon or Buck Rogers, but I believe Flash Gordon serials back in the day, if you actually watched the beginnings of them, they had an opening crawl. Just like another major movie series that we know now.
Yeah.
That's right. You can see the inspiration.
And all of the comic strips are available for you to... read. Mm-hmm. They're all collected now, and I highly, and you know, because we got a year, I believe, until we see these properties, see these products coming out. I suggest that you take the opportunity, find the comic strips, read them all, get yourself immersed, and be prepared.
Because the games are going to be the old school. They're not going to be the 80s version.
There are aspects of the 80s,
but it's going to be mostly like the early settings and that kind
of
thing.
Well, that was one of the things that I thought was exciting, was the fact that it's going to have all of the stuff from the history of Flash for that long,
right?
But they're also going to find stuff from the movie in there,
right?
So it's like
characters that may not have been in the originals, but were in the movies. They're going to be in it and that kind of thing, probably.
Right.
But I think you're right. If you go back and read some of the comics, watch some of the serials, kind of get your head in it. If you're into that sort of thing, that'll really help if you want to play the game when it comes out.
Exactly. And actually, I will take this opportunity to suggest, if you can, get the Dynamite series, the Flash Gordon series by Dynamite Comics. It's really good. It's a great mix of aspects of the 1980s Sam Jones movie and the traditional series as well.
And just a quickie for those who may not know about the other properties that they're coming out with, both Fear Agent and The Goon both have sci-fi aspects. Like, Fear Agent is about a spaceman, and it's a series of, you know, fast-paced adventures. It was a comic. The Goon is an entire comic book series that has a supernatural slant with zombies and ghosts and ghouls and mutants and that kind of thing. So, you know, it's all the same sort of stuff that really sounds great for gaming purposes.
Yeah, and Dark Horse has been around a long time. And for Dark Horse to go to Savage Worlds and for them to be able to close a deal like this, it's huge. And for us to be one of the first to be able give this out to you guys, it just was the perfect way to end my first Gen Con, and in my first convention as on a press pass as a member of the media.
It's official now.
Yes, yeah, official.
We're media.
I you know what? I didn't know what in the world I was doing. I'm not sure I even did it right, but.
Don't admit that.
I think you did fantastic, Kylan. I want to thank you personally for representing GeekWatch One down there.
Thank
and,
you.
Getting all the interviews and everything you did get. So overall, it was a good 4 days?
It was a great 4 days.
Okay.
I'm still slowly recovering because there was a lot. I was in constant motion for 4 days, but it was so worth it.
Okay, so Geeksters, before we wrap this up, I want to remind you guys that starting in September, we're going to go weekly. Now, we need your emails. We want you guys to tell us what we're doing. Now that we're doing it weekly, we're going to need more content. And also, keep checking the website because there will be those blogs coming up. Also, in 2 weeks, our next show, we're going to have on the Tangent Bound podcast. Mark and Jim, I know we're confirmed for Mark. Jim, hopefully you're going to be able to join us. They're going to come on and talk about the network, about podcasting, and everywhere else we go to. They go on as many tangents as we do, if not more. So, Miss Dawn, do you have anything else for today?
Nothing else for now.
Kylan, do you have anything, my friend?
No, I'm good.
You're good?
I'm done.
Miss Vicky, what do you have for us? You're gonna be good? Okay, so Geeksters, you can find us at www.geekwatch1.com. You can also listen, subscribe, rate, and review. We need those 5-star reviews on iTunes. On iTunes and Stitcher, we're GeekWatch 1. Now, we could use those 5-star reviews because the more 5-star reviews we get, the higher we get up on the different listings so people can find us. We're also on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Kylan and Ken. Also, you can email us, remember, at kylanandken@gmail.com. So, for Miss Dawn, for Kylan, for Miss Vicky, for myself, for Andy, remember,
no matter where you go, there you are.